dissident discourse. It can only be millennial. And now here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello and welcome back to Millennial X. This is the final stream for tonight, and it is with Jeremy McKenzie, also known as Raging Dissident, a Canadian activist and, speaker, presenter. Jeremy, thank you for appearing on Millennial. Would you like to introduce yourself to describe what you do for anyone who might not know? Oh, it's muted somehow.
I did that because I didn't want to, I was moving around. I didn't want to make noises. But yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Colin, you said that was your name, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't just dox you, but I guess your face is out there. So
it's okay.
You care about? Yeah. Jeremy's fine. Introduction, not sure where to go. Yeah. Somebody asked me this recently in a, proposition.
Explain yourself. It's quite a difficult thing, isn't it?
Some journalist was like, you know, are you a this or are you that? I'm like, I don't fit into, I don't know what I am. I'm just a maniac, I guess. I do have a podcast that I've had for several, probably since 2018, I think, or early 2019, something like that, called the Ragecast, that I've been doing for several years in Canada, about Canada, geopolitical stuff, cultural stuff, just stuff that upsets me. Or I find interesting, or, you know, could be any number of things, but there's a heavy slant on politics and, you know, that sort of thing, which I started doing after I retired from the military after about almost 15 years as in the Canadian military in the army. Pretty much straight out of high school. I did that till I was about, 2017, however old I was then, till now I do this. I deployed to my last posting on forward operating base, living room couch, and with my new officer, Captain Morgan, the rum bottle, and just got bored. I started watching stuff on the internet, and I didn't really recognize the country I was in anymore, having retired and come back home here to Halifax on the eastern coast of Canada. And within 6 months, you know, I was just kind of, it was obvious things were different and not in a good way. So I started gravitating towards a lot of that stuff online and found a whole, you know, world of the stuff that I wasn't previously aware of, because you're in this hamster wheel of going to work and, you know, taking vacations and having the weekends off in the army like anybody else has a full-time job. So I just kind of was watching one day, and it was actually, you know, for what it's worth, it's what he is, but I was watching, just skipping around. Oh, and Benjamin was on one day, and I was watching this, and this was kind of the beginning of like live streaming that really kind of started blowing up. And it struck me that this guy was just on a laptop in his backyard with, you know, just a shitty webcam, and he's talking to 5,000 people like live. And I was like, that's effective. You know, you could go out and yell on a street corner, or like, I'm going to book a conference center and give a presentation. You might get a 50 people, 100 show. He's talking to 5,000 people, you know, from the comfort of his living room. Like, well, that's cool. Any of you people like Paul Watson, who was, you know, just got a map behind him, and he's competing with CNN for viewing.
Did you think that, were you confident that you would be good at it? Because that's always a risk. When you see someone like Owen Benjamin, you don't know whether you could have the same talent for talking fast. Did you know that you would be that you would have that skill?
I knew I could talk a lot. I've always been bad. I would just kind of entertain the guys at work. I was just always, you know, like that in school, and doing impersonations of people and making fun of people. And I just kind of, I was always very social. I'd like to go to parties and hang, you know, I was just kind of, it's odd because I'm kind of an introvert, but also not. And yeah, I'm a complicated hot mess of a person, but I just started, I thought I'll make some videos. I started doing just short YouTube videos on silly things, kind of like gun control, but also with like a comedic, you know, nonsense, kind of a whimsical Monty Python almost kind of attitude to it. And I thought that was, you know, if you can make it funny, maybe it'll land with people, because I thought, well, you need an audience. I'm just going to put up a live stream, and Who are you? Who cares, right? So you have to produce something first. For a little while, I got a few hundred subscribers, and I was like, all right, I'll start doing that. And first stream I had 17 people. And I was like, that's pretty good. It's not bad, you know? And I was happy with that. And some of them, they're still around today. So I appreciate the support from everybody.
Yeah. And originally, did you do it anonymously? Did you think that was, what was the plan?
Well, originally I was, I didn't know anything. I didn't know what I was doing or what I was, or what I was just kind of mad, you know, for a lot of reasons, from the military, but just in general society and so on. And I kind of just, I invented a moniker. I went with like the humanist, you know, it seemed like a good idea, sounded, made sense sort of thing. So I was like, I started as like Raging Humanist was my original. I had a blog and, you know, this kind of stuff. And I did that for a little while. And then I started making video. And then I had my face out there. I didn't care anymore. I was out of the army. And I think I actually started right at the very tail end of getting out of the military. But that eventually progressed to, after a series of bannings and deplatformings from everything, once you're erased, I was like, well, this, I got tired of that quickly once I, you know, I started learning and listening to a lot of people. And I was like, yeah, this doesn't suit me. I'm definitely not that. That I kind of rebranded to the dissident thing, which is what it is now, which was, I think, around the DLive days, if you remember that, when the whole kind of alt-right ended up on there, and it was just like a circus tent of everybody. So there was a lot of cross-pollination of audiences. All these guys get to, it was like early YouTube almost. It was pretty cool. And I got wiped off of that too for, you know, just being there under the January 6th. You know, I wasn't even talking about it. I wasn't there. I'm Canadian, you know, and they were just like, as an excuse, and confiscated all your money. And so YouTube had got me in the DLive, and then, yeah.
I think exactly the same happened to me, actually, because that would have, let me think, that would have been 2021. And at the start, yeah, that was when it was February 2021 when I got banned from YouTube, and then DLive just a few, like 2 or 3 days later. So it must have been probably in the same purge.
Probably. I went through 7.
It was like talking about battle. You were fighting it that bad. I was there.
The old days. Yeah, I get a medal. The DLive bannings. They actually gave me my account back a little while ago. I was like, why would I? Who cares? I don't want it back. Nobody uses it now. Chinese gaming site.
Yeah, the same thing. We're actually streaming to DLive right now. because I got my account back as well, and I thought, oh well, okay then. And there are some people, I go and have a look at it, and I'll do it right now. There will be some people watching this stream, well, hopefully, it's just there, you know. It's like as a backup. Yeah, there are 3 people there.
I'm on like Kick and Twitch and all these other things. Like, I don't really advertise. There's not really a lot. It's just another option, because you never know when everything goes down. I'm mainly on Rumble now, but. You know, that,
well, exactly.
Any day they, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It could happen, even with X. I mean, we could all be banned off there. Who knows? Yeah. Well, let's, the obvious question to ask is, you said that you were in the military for 15 years. And
almost.
And the world changed. And when you got out of the military, you realized it didn't feel like the same country anymore.
Yeah.
And that's like, so 2017, 18.
Yeah.
That is a point at which a lot of people realize that the world was changing fast. Mm-hmm. Would you like to just describe what had changed and how it didn't feel like the same country anymore? Because I think a lot of people, I know you've probably told this story a million times, but it's always interesting to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty, so what happened was I actually got injured while I was in the military. We were just doing some winter training stuff on a snowmobile trail, and long story short, I ended up going into the trees and kind of a Ricky Bobby moment. I'm going in the woods. This is not good. And, wrecked that. And I was off work for, luckily I didn't die. Good. Spent about three months and a half or so doing like, you know, light duties, rehab kind of stuff. I had to get, physio and stuff for my leg, and had a pretty decent concussion, but quite a lot of time on my hands. And I'm not I kind of get bored quickly. I don't like to sit around. I find stuff to do. And this felt like a good time, because it had always kind of bothered me. What were we doing anyway? Like, what is the military really doing? I'd always been fascinated from it since I was a kid. Once I realized what the infantry was, it's all I wanted to do. I was just, you know, I just needed to be a part of it and experience that. So it kind of overshadowed the misgivings I was having, you know, like in the back of my mind. Like, I watched, I don't know, probably not too dissimilar in age, but I watched 9/11 happen live on TV, like a lot of people did. And even at the time, I was like, I'm 15, 16, like, this doesn't really make too much sense. But, you know, I'm a kid, and I'm sure they've got it under control. And, but, you know, fast forward to I get hurt, I'm like, well, I'm going to look now. I'm curious as to what's going on. I watched some documentaries on Netflix that, you know, we're pretty insane, pretty wild about some camps in Europe. And I was like, I just want to know, you know, how did this happen? What is going on? And back in those days, YouTube was kind of the Wild West. I mean, there was everything you could imagine was on there. And it was, I spent a lot of nights up late, you know, listening to and seeing a lot of stuff I'd never seen or heard of at all before. I'd run into people like Ryan Dawson on there was kind of instrumental because he had the notes, he had the details. It wasn't like, you know, the, what was that 9/11 documentary that was kind of popular early on? Missing
Zeitgeist?
Oh, there was that one. It was like Missing Links or, I can't remember what it is. It was the one where they're like, there was no plane at the Pentagon, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it was short on substance. It was kind of entertaining, but it's like, is there anything else? Is anybody, and this guy's got names, dates, details, bank transfers, photographs, you know, memos and government policy memo, all this stuff. So I'm, you know, into that. And then you go down that road long enough and, you know, leads to the end of the trail. And eventually you're just like, I can't, you know, I just had a child. My, their mom at the time was pregnant with my daughter. And I was like, I can't, man. You know, it was bad enough before, you know, I felt bad. Like, what if I get killed? You know, my poor family, my parents, but now I have children. And so that's always a risk. But now, like, I don't even believe in what I'm doing. Like, I don't believe in this. Like, I, you know, the job's cool. I still like the Army kind of, you know, for what it is. But on the one hand, I'm kind of tired of it. It was only supposed to be a few years. I was coming up on 14, 15 years. And now I've got these little children. And I was just like, I can't, man. It's just, it's too easy. I saw how easy it is for you to get smashed when, you know, you can do everything right and you die anyway. It wasn't cool. It was kind of like gambling in a way. I played poker for a while too. And I stopped that because same thing. It's like, you can do everything right and lose anyway. I don't like games like that, you know, but that's life, I guess. So I had to kind of learn that, but yeah, I kind of got disenfranchised and, you know, lost, you know, the passion for it, because if you're going to do something like that, you're going to fight a war. You're going to not only risk your life, but you're going to kill other people, you know, in big numbers, not one or two. Like, you might have to, you know, some of the guys were chopping down people like they were trees, you know, and it's, you know, that's on your soul. And you go like, why were we there? Ah, cause I was told to. Like, is that good enough? Like, I'm wrestling with these, you know, I'm just kind of, this is my thought process. I'm laying there on the couch. Like, you know, I'm not an atheist. I believe in something, you know, a God or whatever. I'm not a religious guy, but I do feel like, you know, you need to account for your actions. You know, I think it matters. And I'm just kind of, you know, getting worried. Like, is that good enough? Like, oh, I just did what they told me to do. Like, yeah, that's, I don't know. That's like, you're an intelligent guy. Like, you didn't ask any questions. No, I didn't feel like asking. I just went and did it. Like, yeah, it bothered me. So I was, and now I see and learn all this other, there's all this other crap going on I was not aware of. And I'm like, I'm just a fool that's being, you know, used up for other people's, you know, political ambitions or for financial reasons or whatever. And I was literally guarding opium fields, you know, it was like photograph. And we were standing around, you know, why are we doing this? You know? And they're like, oh, because Halliburton is here and they're doing a pipeline survey and they want to make sure that there's the cool. So this has nothing to do with the Taliban at all right now. Anyway, and it's like, what if I get killed on this operation? I'm, well, he died guarding an opium field, which then comes back to Canada, and now it's all over the streets, and our doctors are prescribing, you know, heroin to people, and it's killing. I mean, not just here, everywhere, all over the Western world. I'm sure it's bad in Scotland as well. And I just, like, again, like, what are we doing? And some of the guys at work didn't really get it. I was one of the first ones to kind of quit, and then over the next few years, it was kind of just an avalanche of guys. The morale was in the toilet, and I can't even imagine how bad it is now. But it was getting bad then, and, you know, like I said before we sat down, I'm kind of a long-winded, so if you want me to sum it up, you'll have to prompt me. But on the way out, when I got out, it was like, what, there wasn't anything particular that prompted me to kind of get into this. It was just kind of an overall sense of, like, something doesn't, my instincts are, something's wrong. It's like, you know, when bad weather's coming in, it doesn't just happen. Like, you can kind of feel the air pressure drop a little bit. It starts to cool off. You're like, we're going to get wet soon, I'm pretty sure. And it was that kind of dreading, like, I just, the political landscape, the way people were talking, the things that were being said in schools and what was on the news, just as an overall, my pattern recognition computer was like, things are degenerating, or at least they're rattling, coming loose, like you're driving a vehicle, like it's making sounds it didn't used to make. Like, there's just little hints. It was enough to prompt me to get involved. I certainly didn't think it would get to this level. I was just wanting to make YouTube videos and make some people laugh as a side hobby, kind of something to do. Like, I was bored. I was in the Army. I didn't know what else to do. It was my whole life. I, you know, if I'm not, you know, Mass Corporal Sergeant McKenzie, who am I? I'm just some guy, just dad who's drunk. I don't know what to do with myself. So I did that, and I met some cool people along the way. And
it's funny, because I got into this in a similar way, actually, because I simply, like, more... Well, I just didn't know where my life was going or what else I can do. I thought, I was 31, and I kind of thought that I'd missed the boat. Like, well, that's it. I was unemployed. I was on the dole and all this. And so I just felt like I had nothing to lose. So it was kind of funny just hearing you say that, because it's similar in some ways that you were not depressed, but just like kind of listless and not sure what to do. So you did this and it seemed like a good idea, but you didn't have big visions for it. Again, I didn't have big visions for mine either. I thought it would come to nothing.
I was frozen there for a good 10 or 15 seconds. I couldn't tell if you could tell or not.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. The thing is, people that follow my show and stuff, they know I've had a long running battle with the internet. In every province, everywhere I've been, it's just between people screwing with me and trying to, you know, attack the service. And so I have a Starlink connected right now. I also have a buried landline that also doesn't work. And I mean, I could try to switch to that if this keeps acting up, but.
Do you think it's the feds?
I don't think so. I think it's just more quality of it. Like basically everything in Canada that exists is far worse than it was 10 years ago and 20 years ago. And there is just been a constant state of degeneration. Everyone's putting less effort into everything. Everyone's upset. Everyone's depressed. Everyone's anxious. Nobody gives a shit about anything. Everything's poorer quality almost by the day. It feels like I'll go to places that I hadn't been in a few months or a year, and it's just, they clearly haven't painted anything, and you know, everything is just eroding. It's upsetting, you know. And this is another thing, like, how much do we pay for that? Again, I think we pay the highest prices for telecommunications in the world, and it doesn't work. It's terrible. The cell coverage is terrible. Like, you'll lose calls on the highway, like 10 minutes from a major city, there's no clear sky, you know. They don't have any, there's only two companies, really, the two big ones in here. They won't let any of the American companies come compete because, you know, how are they going to make money that way? So we pay it's hundreds of dollars for just an internet connection. And it's not even reliable. It doesn't even work. I did get a half a year for free from Eastlink and 50% off for the rest of my life after I complained of how bad it was. And then they were like, well, it's probably something you're doing. why would I do that to myself? I was like, I work online. I'm paying you. And if I can't get online, I can't work.
Oh, he's frozen. That's unfortunate. Let's see if he comes back. I think this has been 10 seconds now. 15. 20. Jesus, maybe we've lost him.
Yeah, I'm back. It's not even normally this bad. I don't know. I could just switch the other connection, but I'm not sure how much more stable it's going to be.
It might help if you switched off your camera, because that would put less load on your internet, I think. Let's see. He's gone. Dear. I don't know what to do. Has this ever happened before? I don't know if it has. Oh, fuck. He's dropped out. Oh, dear. Let's see. I think he's probably switching to a different internet service. Okay, let's see. let's just be patient. I mean, it's the end of the night. There's no rush. It's fine. It'll be fine. Okay. Yeah, DLive, I can see three people who have commented there recently. So, I don't know. That's pretty much what you would expect. Here he is. Right. Hello again. Hello.
Hey, sorry about that. Again, I switched connections and I got to reboot the thing when it does that. So luckily it's on a SSD. Or not. Did, oh, it, It's so it's hard to keep any kind of pacing or rhythm because I never know. It's always just, you know, chopping and cutting whenever, and I don't know if I'm even connected now.
No, you're connected. It's fine. All right. Well, I'll try to remember. Yeah. Each time it happens, I'll try to remember what it was you were saying or I was asking at the time. So it should be easy to get you back on track. But also, you might find that deactivating your camera it'll put less load on your internet connection. Like if you put stop cam, if you press that button at the bottom of the screen.
I just disabled and enabled some different things. So hopefully this may level it out.
Okay.
It's never the same issue either. It's always a different thing at night. And I don't touch anything. And I sit back down. And it's like now you have a different set of gremlins in the wires.
It must be the bane of your life. It must be awful. Being tormented by it.
Like, it's bad. there's been a few times where, you know, like, it's a slog doing this too, right? I mean, you've been doing this for quite a while as well. And it's just, you know, there's days where you're just like, I just want to be free of this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, you just get tired. And the internet is like, fine. If you're going to keep doing this, I'll just smash everything. I'm just going to eventually go berserk and destroy everything. And then like, there, now I'm free. There's my excuse. I raged out and destroyed everything. And I don't need all new equipment. And that's going to take months. So now I'm on a vacation. hopefully not, but.
I'm really sorry that you're in that position.
I'm sorry. It's so irritating. This is quite choppy as well. If you can hear me, that's cool, I guess. I can't really. Yours is kind of in and out, but man,
all right.
Pain in the ass. And this is what, again, Canadians are paying, you know, $150 a month for this internet service that disconnects abruptly whenever for no reason. And there's like, yeah, there's nothing we can do. Okay. I guess there's not.
How annoying. Okay.
Where were we?
I was about to ask you, because when you said that you saw the world changing, expected you were going to say that, you know, the trans stuff, gay stuff, feminism, all of that was the scene.
Yeah. Just kind of the overall, like, it wasn't just one or two things. It was kind of coming in everywhere. It was just like this rot or something. It was just like odd, unexplainable things that, you know, unnecessary changes. It was being ham-fisted and forced onto people when they didn't want it. And I thought we had more time. Like, to the stage that we're in now, I assumed this would be 10 years down the road from today. I thought it was like 15, 20 years from now, it's probably going to be as bad as it is now. It was more like three, four years. I did totally, you know, like boxing or something. I just totally misjudged the speed that this was incoming, and it, it got pretty bad, and it's really bad now. Like, it's, I used to say I'm the morale officer or the morale NCO when I was in the army. Just try to, you know, make guys laugh and try to keep your spirits up. Because if you don't have that, you won't fight. You'll give up. And that's what I try to, especially here. And it's bad. Like, a few years ago, I was just talking to my friend of mine, Derek Harrison, who's one of the guys I met. Originally, there's this book there, Meme Comp, kind of about the shenanigans that we went through. But I would say, remember, like 4 or 5 years ago, we would do this. We would talk about a lot of the same problems that we have today, and talk to other people and so on. And the kind of mood was like, you'd laugh about it. You'd be like, "She's pretty bad, boy." You know, through a giggle and a smile, like, "It's pretty awful." And look how crazy this is. And look how crazy that is. And people are still doing that, but they're not laughing, they're not smiling. They're very dejected, depressed, and hope. It's very bleak here, to be quite honest. It's so bad that the 5% of all deaths annually in Canada are government assisted suicide. People asking to die. You have to apply for permission to kill yourself in Canada. You can do that through the MAID program, and that's 5%. And it's that doesn't count actual, you know, suicides and overdoses and so on. So I don't know what was the real number, 10%, 12%, like 10% of our country a year is dying through, like, I can't take it anymore. That's insane.
But if you kill yourself without seeking the government's permission first, do you get some kind of penalty?
I don't know. Maybe they tax your family, carbon tax. I wouldn't be surprised. Just from 2016 to now, so not even eight years or so, so World War II is about 5 years. World War One, a little less. Canada specifically lost 62,000 men, both wars, like one and then one a little more in World War II, a couple more thousand dead. And so the government of Canada has killed now 65,000 to 70,000 of its own citizens. through this program.
That is fucking grim.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it very quickly spread from people who are just like some terminal illness or whatever to, well, you're depressed or something. So that was...
Yeah, or homeless. They want to lower the age now. They think, oh, well, what if 16-year-olds want to get it? You know, and if they could 16-year-olds get it, why not 14-year-olds? And you know, they want, like, they would have 10-year-olds voting if possible. And that is what they did. They said, no, this is just for the terminally ill. Like, there's no hope. There's no whatever. And people say, this is a slippery slope here, you know, and, oh, there's no such thing as a slippery slope. Well, they do this with the gun control, with speech control, with everything else. You start with a little, you just creep slowly a little bit at a time. They get upset. You just, you know, stop, freeze, wait for them to calm down, and then you start coming back again. You just never go too far. And this way it's two steps forward, one step back, but 20 steps later, you're 10 steps ahead. And that's what they do. And now we've reached the point where it's not just terminally ill people, 90-year-old. It's, oh, are you depressed? Are you sad? We can kill you. You want to die? People that are depressed frequently do want to die. Yeah. And now that's a medical option, which is, you know, what's the, there's a credo or something of the medical community, like do no harm. I can't remember what the thing is, but your whole thing.
Yeah, the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. And it's like that. Are you helping? You helping this depressed person because, you know, but that's the, why would I, who am I asking? The Canadian healthcare system? These are the same people that just, you know, they make a fortune slinging heroin and injecting people with God knows what and getting rich to murder people. And I think the second leading cause of one of the top five anyway, or four leading causes of death is medical malpractice. You know, so when they're like, trust the science and trust the medicine, I'm like, I don't, you know. In fact, I had a, I'm going to be careful because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but somebody very close to me was going through some rough, you know, depressed, and went to the hospital and said, I'm not doing well. You know, I'm pretty depressed. And, you know, they're like, okay, well, we're going to commit you, you know, against your will, for 30 days in an institution. And she was like, whoa, you know, that's not, I thought I would get a therapist or something. And they're like, no, you're going to do this. And, you know, they're texting me like they're kidnapping me against my will, you know, or trying to. This was in 2016, 2015. That's the hospital. So you go in there and say, I'm not doing well. It's like, well, maybe they'll put you in an institution, or maybe now these days, maybe they just kill you. I don't know. Maybe they'll give you a sedative if you're upset and you pass out, and they vaccinate you while you're asleep, and then you wake up with cancer from God. Oh, well, now you get made. There was a woman I just covered on my show in Winnipeg the other day. She waited something like 6 years for a knee replacement, and then finally has this surgery, which they botched. So then she has to go back in and get it repaired, which they can't because it was botched. So now they have to amputate the leg, which they did. And the average wait time in Canada for a, going into the hospital, I need a doctor, or I need to be seen by a specialist or someone, 30 weeks. So you went in now, maybe we can fit you in August. Like, I have a really bad headache. I'm afraid I might have a brain tumor. Okay. If you're still alive in August, we'll get you an MRI. Maybe. If there's any doctors, the wait time for family doctor in Nova Scotia, where I live, is over 10 years. So forever, you know, it's not like there's a plan. We have these are the numbers. It's just, oh, 10 years or so, we'll put you on the list. Like, list, you know. It's
really, that is absolutely shocking. Because I think people always think the grass is greener. So they hear good things about the Australian healthcare system, or they hear good things about the Canadian healthcare system. Maybe not about the British healthcare system.
Obviously, it's free. You guys have free healthcare. We pay massive, like something like 70% of our tax burden goes to healthcare, and it's the worst. It's like probably one of the worst in the world. Our hospitals look like they're like, if you even when I was a kid, I felt like these seem kind of, you know, when I'm like 10 or 12, 15, I'm like, I think they should probably get an update soon, right? An upgrade, just the equipment, the building, the facility, everything. If you've seen like modern facilities in like Turkey or like Saudi Arabia or any of these places, like spaceships compared to what, if you go to a Canadian hospital, you'd think you're in Belarus, you know, 1986, like post-Soviet bloc, like it's terrible. There's like rust everywhere. Everything's falling apart. Nobody speaks English. You're like, you're on your own. And you know, if you need like a prescription or something minor, and you're going to spend a day and a half in the hospital on a wait list, or, you know, people are dying on the floor. They can't get a bed. But anything serious, like, I wouldn't risk it. I would fly to Mexico or Turkey or some other place. And if you've got the money to, you know, try it out there, because you're not going to get any help here. It just doesn't exist. The police now, there was a guy the other night, like I said, it's just everything's degrading. His home was broken into, armed thugs, you know, and pointing a gun at him and at his daughter.
Jesus Christ. Give
it what you want, or we'll kill you. He calls 911 four times, and they put him on hold.
For God's sake.
So he hangs up, calls back, put him on hold. And then eventually the guy leaves with whatever he stole. Luckily, he didn't kill anybody. And then he gets through, and they're like, yeah, what do you need? It's like, I needed you 5 minutes ago. And luckily, I don't now. And that's just how it is. There's a massive crime wave. And this is in Toronto. Huge crime wave. They're completely out of control. The police have no answers to anything. And the chief of police say, well, mostly they want to steal your cars. So just leave your car keys on the dish outside in your on your porch or whatever, and they'll just take that, and then they won't attack you. Okay, so I need that to go to work, though. Like, you can, people can't just lose a car. Like, they're $20,000 to $50,000, $60,000, you know, the hassle of this. So it's like, just give them, you know, just give them whatever you want. And I saw the police the other day. I like chirping them because it's funny. But it's true. You know, they were talking about home invasions and this kind of stuff. And I was like, have you tried telling people just begging for your life? You know, if somebody breaks in your home, just begin on your knees and say, please, just do that. Just be pathetic as possible. Have you tried that, Toronto police? It's a travesty. This place is an embarrassment to everything that was sacrificed and cost to build it up to what it was. It's a poor insult. It's a costume. It's basically Canada now is an Indian man wearing a skin suit of Wilfrid Laurier. You know, that's basically it's disgusting.
Yeah. And obviously mass immigration will be part of the reason for this dysfunction, the degradation, the things falling apart, things not being done as well as they used to be. Yeah. But I'm guessing that isn't the full answer. It sounds like there's a sort of spiritual crisis in Canada such that no one can even justify having a first world country anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a global problem. I mean, like there's
just a real... Yeah, it sounds like it's worse in Canada than even
it's
here.
It's pretty bad. I mean, you know, there's only... You know, there's 42, like when I graduated high school in 2004, Canada had 31 million people in it. Now it has 42 million. So 25% of the country came here in the last 50, you know, 20 years, like since 2004. And even before that, like there's almost 10 to 15 million people have just come here, you know, and they're just migrants. And like the first video I ever made, it was about the Syrian refugees in like 20, I don't know when this would have been, 14, 15, something like that. And it was like 200,000 people they were bringing to Canada. And I was like, that's a city of people. Like 200,000 people is a small city. Are they bringing the amount of doctors, power plants, garbage removal, medical services? Like the, because we don't have enough of that now. So we'll just copy and paste a whole city of people. That's not going to help anything. And we just destroyed their country. We just annihilated it. And you're going to bring the survivors to come live here with us, the people that did it. I feel like this is a really bad idea. And, oh, you're a racist. You're, like, this was the beginning. I was just innocently like, what? You know?
This is the whole policy called invade and invite. So you invade them and then you invite them back to your place. It's, as I've said many times before, it even sounds insane.
Yeah. It is insane. We live in an insane country and there's just... I try to just gas people up. Like I'm a kind of a fiery, angry, passionate guy. I care about a lot of it really bothers me. It really upsets me. Some people pretend to care, but I unfortunately do. So it's not like an act. Like it's not fun, you know, being upset all the time. Like, for example, I'll probably traumatize people tomorrow this video, but just scrolling around your feeds and I'm like, people are like, remember this? And I'm like, I do remember that. And it's an old woman that like, you know, someday my mom will be that age. So she's probably like 80. And she's behind a glass door and she's holding a picture of her son who's filming her from the other side of the door. And she's like begging him to come in. And he's like, nope, you stick because of COVID. Right. And he's like, make sure you got your ankle boys. She's just like dead inside. You know, she's heartbroken, you know, and she just collapses in the chair and gives up. And we did that to all of our seniors. Like so many of them died alone behind a plastic sheet. My girlfriend Morgan was just telling me, like, she's like, man, remember this? They would fill gloves with warm water and put it on people's hands to simulate the feeling of someone holding your hand as they die alone behind a sheet. You know, that's what we did, you know, and I used to say, you can judge a society. I read this. I mean, I didn't come up with it, but you could judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable, you know, our children and our seniors. And we absolutely have no respect for them whatsoever. So we suck. Our spirit, like you said, our spirit is gone. We won't even defend ourselves and we don't even know who we are. If you don't know who you are, how can you defend it? You know, and I ask people like, well, what is it? They say, well, a Canadian's a Canadian. I'm like, okay, what is that? Define it for me. Like, oh, it's, and they say it's corporate products. It's Tim Hortons and hockey and Trailer Park Boys and like weed and stuff. Like these are things you can buy. So if I just buy these things, I'm, yeah. And they're like, or no, because you're born here. Oh, the magic dirt theory. Okay. So if I have my son in China, is he Chinese? Does he come out? Is he Chinese? No, he's not. Well, that's weird because he's born in China. So why didn't he become Chinese? Chinese people can become Canadian, though, but you can't become Chinese. So that doesn't work. And then they just eventually start calling you racist and stuff. And, you know, there is an answer. I don't. Oh, there it is. Here. This is our evil, naughty nationalist club. But, you know, these patches here, this old was the old Canadian crest. And it has the, you know, the English, French, Irish and Scottish peoples represented on here. Very distinctly. It was on the flag. This was centered. They had the Union Jack up there. And that's what a Canadian is. You know, those people came here.
We can't see it because your image is frozen, I'm afraid. But we saw it the other night with Fortisax and the Ferryman's Toll. So, don't worry. We know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Is it still frozen? Am I making a weird face?
No, you look good, actually. Don't worry about it.
Well, if it's frozen, I'll just turn it off and put on my sweatpants, you know? I'll just
turn it off. Well, there's your avatar. That will probably put less... If you stop cam, and that will probably put less load on your internet connection.
Yeah. I did stop it and turn it back on, but I don't know if it helped.
I don't know. But it's still frozen. That's really weird. I can't explain.
It's the feds. I don't think anyone. It's probably the feds. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. But I'd probably have to leave and come. That's so irritating. You know, you pay. What do you pay for this stuff? And it doesn't work like everything else. But maybe I'll. I can refresh this quickly and come back if that'll work. How long has it been frozen? Just a minute ago, or?
Oh, a few minutes. A couple of minutes. Yeah.
All right. Let me just refresh the page quickly and maybe fingers crossed.
All right. Well, there we go. I hope you're all enjoying this somewhat shambolic stream with Jeremy McKenzie. I think it's quite enjoyable. I should say, if it seemed that I was being disrespectful earlier, he was telling a sad story and I was laughing. It's because the way he tells it is he's clearly a natural comedian, and the way he tells it is funny. So I couldn't help but be amused. But it occurred to me, I'm going to look like a psychopath here. So I try to sort that out. Ah, he's back. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, no offense. I didn't mind. No, I'm the same way. I was going to say, because we're Scottish. You just have to sarcastically laugh at the worst shit, because otherwise you'll go insane. You live under British brutality long enough, you just have to make a joke out of everything or you'll lose your mind.
Yes, that is part of it. That is part of it, seeing the absurdity. I'll tell you an example of that is when I was at my really, really low ebb. This is back in a long time ago, like 2010 or 2008 or something. I was terrible. I was feeling absolutely dreadful. And I turned on the radio expecting this will take my mind off things. And the first thing I heard was a very serious woman saying, abuse and severe traumatic loss. And that actually did make me burst out laughing at the time. I thought that's like the last thing I could have done with hearing right now. So thank you, BBC.
Thanks for lifting my spirits. Excellent. No, they don't do that. They rule by fear and anxiety. That's all it is. You know, everything that comes out of the government, the state, to me, is fear and anxiety. Just the 1-2 all the time. And that's how you manipulate people. I just learned it by watching. That's what they did with 9/11. That's what they did with COVID. And whatever the next one is, I call it the big spooky. And I feel like the next one's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be World War III, Trump assassination. They blow up New Jersey with, I don't know. But it really feels like they're moving towards an end game here. And I feel like if we need a kick in the ass to, you know, get the animal in the pen, then they will. And that's just always been the MO. So I'm just always waiting for the next one. And people say, oh, I would never fall for that. Like, bro, you followed lines on the floor at the grocery store because they said so. Yes, you will. You'll fall for anything. You did. You just fell for the dumbest, most obvious shit. There was never anything. It could not be easier. It was an underhand, slow pitch softball. It was a T-ball, and you missed. So, yeah, you're going to fall for whatever they do. Trust me. You're not that guy. You're one of these no inner monologue NPC walking around, take the chip out, put the Ukraine chip in. Oh, that's out. Oh, Israel now. Oh, no, wait, it's whatever's next.
Yeah, well, people are extremely malleable.
I used to say you have to laugh, or you can cry, or you can laugh. You know, you can do two things. One of them will carry you further, and the other one will probably make you kill yourself. So I get to learn that in the military. Because there's a lot of awful shit there too, but it's common with anybody that I think you live in reality. They say, oh, it's common with these kinds of people, these kinds of jobs. If you're like a police officer or a first responder or people that work in healthcare, you work at in that part of the world or life where there's a lot of rough days, you kind of develop that coping mechanism. And people that don't understand it, I just think they've never been through it and they get offended by it. It's like, you're just weak, you know? They don't recognize it, you know? It doesn't offend me. I see people joke about all kinds of things all the time. It doesn't offend me because I can tell, you know, what their intention are and their spirit is behind it. There's a lot of real sensitive, soft people these days.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask you this. What do you think about Justin Trudeau?
Oh, he's the best. It's amazing. I mean, he'll be gone soon.
His government is falling apart. Is that true?
Yes. He's been done since, I would say, after the trucker convoy. His support just fell right out of the window, and he's been just dead in the water pretty much ever since. I mean, never underestimate them. I mean, never underestimate the conservatives' ability to, from the jaws of victory, lose. They should have won the 2021 election was theirs for the taking, and they just totally botched it and absolutely, you know, idiots, you know, just totally left it there. And he's been on the outs since then, but I don't like any of them. Like I studied the problem for a little while, and you know, like, who can we vote for? How do we get, you know? But the longer you spend examining this, and you go through history and stuff, like I was first introduced to how politics really works when I was, you know, interested in following Ron Paul back in 2008, and how he was done pretty dirty. You know, he was selling out stadiums, and they would say in first place is Barack Obama, and in third place is Newt Gingrich, and in fourth place, and it was just, what? 1, 3, 4. They would just, Ron doesn't exist. And if they did acknowledge him, they would just be an empty silhouette. They wouldn't even show his face. They wouldn't put, it was just wild. And then when the primaries came around, like, yeah, nobody voted in that county. Everybody didn't vote that day. Oh, well, there you go. That's fine. So they can just not let you play if they want to. And you're seeing it now at the AfD in Germany. I said, these people are like, oh, we got to vote this party in. It's like, you can, but as soon as you get within striking distance of actually doing anything, guess what? You're going to find out you're an extremist and your party is now illegal, which is what they're going to try to do in Germany. They're trying to do that to the Germans now with the AfD, who aren't even that right wing in the first place, but they're different enough that they fear them that badly. They've got their own politicians on watch lists and surveillances, and they're basically considered extremists, right? The political system's been entirely weaponized, where it's like there's no respect for the other anymore. This isn't a discussion. It's not a let's come to negotiating. It's fuck you. That's it. But behind, you know, that's in the back room. Up front, it's a handshake and a smile, and we're gonna, you know, work together. But that's not how it is. So there is no political solution. There is no one to vote for because you're not allowed to. If there's anyone that you can choose, it's because they've been approved by someone else. And our system is totally gone. We don't have any, every party is a liberal party. Every policy they have is the same. They don't differ on any major issues whatsoever to anything that matters, like mass migration or taxes or wars or anything like this. They're all, you know, the transgender stuff, none of it. They're all for all of these things. And, you know, everybody's a Canadian. You just show up and be here. You just spend two of 3 years. So you can be here for a year, then go home, then come back for a year. Guess what? You're Canadian now. You breathed enough of our air and you turned into this. Isn't that wild? You know how that works. It's some magic air. No wonder everybody wants it so bad.
And yet they're asking, was it 5 million people to self-deport when their visas expire?
Yeah.
That's clearly not going to happen.
They won't even deport criminals. There's a story yesterday. This is every day. I started doing I don't have like a formal segments or anything. I kind of just, like I'm doing now, I just kind of go off for a few hours. And, but I started like this, you know, this week in Jeetery, and it'll be several stories of horrible things that migrants and mostly Indians are doing to people or have been caught doing and seen doing. And it's tolerated. And this guy robbed a liquor store and then killed several people in a vehicle accident. And he's out on bail on probation. And they said, you better be careful because you might get deported. You keep acting up like this. It's like, he should be executed in public is what he should be. He's not even a citizen. And he's here killing our people and stealing. And you're treating him like he needs detention or what exactly? We don't have any respect for ourselves. We allow other people who aren't us to murder our citizens, steal from everyone. Billions of dollars are leaving the country in remittances. They're just, you know, Oh, it's strengthening the economy. Well, they're all stealing our money. All the money's going back to India or China or the Philippines or wherever. None of it stays here. It's all, we're being robbed. And they go, well, you know, we have to because it's racist otherwise. Like, okay, well then let's be racist. Are you serious? Yes, because you're be called names and have some people be mad at you or destroy your entire world and country and your children grow up in poverty and as a hated minority in a place. Like this is not a hard call. of all the things you could be, if someone calling you racist, like that's the price to get in. Like that's pretty cheap. That's fine. I've been shot at with rockets. I don't mind people being angry at, you know, my worldview. People calling me names. I'm deaf in my left ear. A Chinese RPG-7 near blew me in half, and I'm deaf now from that in my left ear. So I don't really, you know, people might call you names. I'm like, oh, not that. It's crazy to me. But I guess it's not just that, you know, it's like, it's what comes after. Like I said, it's the weaponized political system. Your job's at stake. Your family will turn on. Like, it's just the pressure to conform here is so immense that no one dares step outside of that. So I've always been trying to just kind of everyone's demoralized. I'm trying to remoralize them and, you know, fire them up to show them these things, like show them this woman dying alone. Like, that's not okay. And we did that to them because these people who stole from you and are destroying the country told you that you had to. Well, I'm telling you, it's okay to tell those people to go fuck themselves. You know, we started, you know, selling just stuff, you know, items and stuff for the, it was up there, FYMM. This guy made it with a 3D printer. I just went on a rant one day and I was like, oh, fuck you, make me. You know, like, well, you have to do these things. Well, you're going to have to come down and physically make me do it then. Do that. I'm just committed to that. You want me to get vaccinated? Hold me down and stick it in my arm then, big wheel. You want me to do that? You're going to force me or we're going to fight.
Do you think that would have eventually happened? Because I do think it would have eventually got to that point.
If we let them, they were gearing up to that.
If it had gone on another year, 2 years.
Probably less.
Yeah.
Before the convoy happened, the prime minister was on TV talking about how we're taking up too much space. And what do we do with these people? And do they need to be reeducated? Do they need to be, you know, sequestered? Do they need to be, what do we got to do something with it. Like just insane, should be career ending rhetoric that you even said that. You should just be gone. But it was
a pandemic of the unvaccinated and all that kind of stuff. Right at the end, like in December, I guess that was December 21, Biden said that.
Yeah.
They're in for a winter of severe illness and death. I think that was the word. And then, in as you say, the convoy happened, and then it started to wind down. And I don't know if it's coincidental, because the Omicron variant was less serious than they all thought.
Well, it was like I used to use a metaphor where I would say, if I could go to the bank right now and just steal everything, and everyone let me do it. Why wouldn't I do it again? And everyone let me do it. I'm just going to keep doing this until they stop me. Like, I go down to the bank every day and make a withdrawal. I just take whatever they have and they go, well, please stop. And I go, nah, I don't want to, you know? And that's all we had. So it was just going to keep going and going and going. If we had done a convoy 2 years prior to that, maybe, you know, that would have been the end of it. But temperature had reached such a level and the feeling had gotten so bad, like just that kind of rhetoric. And it's not coming from just, you know, some guy. Like, this is the prime minister on national television talking about locking up our own people and you know, re-educating, like, what was this, North Korea? And they're attacking everybody's livelihood. It was too much. It was enough. There was some wild talk going on at that time. It wasn't just like, maybe we'll protest, and I'm not going to name names or out anybody, but people were like, maybe we just, we do civil war. Maybe we do that. Maybe we start kidnapping people. Maybe we have to, like, these are conversations that men were having in different communities, and because of that's how severe and upset and, you know, worried they were for their future, their family. They really genuinely felt under threat from the government. They were like losing sleep and didn't know what to do. And they're like, a lot of people I know fled and left the country. They ran away from their home because they didn't feel safe here. And people are still doing that to this day. Everybody with the means to leave has left, more or less. It's heartbreaking. That's the level we got to. So yeah, a lot of people were like, I don't know who had the idea originally, but it was just, people were like, fuck, let's go. And I saw the video. It was just all these trucks on a convoy from out west somewhere to head to Ottawa. And I normally don't participate in the protest stuff because it's ineffective. They don't care. You know, I'm not going to do anything. But this one was, they had a plan and it wasn't bad. You know, it was all legal. There was no, what were they going to do? I didn't know. And it turned out, you know, they just enabled the War Measures Act and beat the hell out of everybody. But, you know. It did seem like it was going to be effective to some degree. So I was, you know, fascinated to go down and see how it played out. And, Yeah, I think it played a huge role in stopping a lot of that madness, or at least putting the brakes on it for now. And I think it was just, I think they knew that. I think they know, like, we're just going to take from them until they freak out, until it gets to that point, and then we'll just lay off for a little while and go back to stealing once they've calmed down, which they're doing. And now everyone's up in our, well, Trudeau's leaving and, you know, his cabinet's all resigning, so yay, we're going to get a new government, everything's going to be fine. They all did it too. They're all up in arm, we're all in this together. They all made videos and go get vaccinated and stay home, stay safe. They killed your citizens. They didn't. The politicians didn't go out and organize this convoy. Nobody in the Conservative Party did that. They weren't out there in the street getting arrested. They weren't doing fundraisers. They weren't bailing people out of jail. They weren't doing any of this stuff. That was just the moms and dads and workers of Canada that did that. And where are they now? Hundreds of these guys lost their trucking licenses, their businesses, their vehicles were confiscated or destroyed by the police. They don't. Where are they? They didn't get a book deal and a nice tour from Rebel News. That's weird, you know? And now it's just, oh, we'll just have an election. Like, no, they're traitors. These people, they sat there and watched all this happen, and they're just, well, let's just move on. I'm not moving on. To move on from that would be to accept that all those people they killed, well, they never really mattered, right? Because what if that was my father or my son or something? Am I ever going to be okay? No. Well, that happened to people, and I'm upset on their behalf. Because someone has to be. No one else seems to care. And the politicians certainly don't. So I really have no patience for anybody who's like, well, you just got to vote for this. I'd rather hit you in the face, honestly, than vote for anyone. I'm not voting ever again. There's no point to it. I don't think the political class is even grounded in reality at all. They have no concept of reality. They're over here talking about, we got to stand up to the Russians. Bro, we don't have a military. We don't have anything. We have nothing. We're defenseless as a nation entirely. And you think we should be committed to potentially a third world war. Why? You don't know. Show me where Crimea is on a map, conservative man. Do you even know? Name me four Ukrainian cities. Name me two Ukrainian celebrities that are not Alexander Usyk. You know? Do you know anything? No, but it is worth destroying the world, though. We're quite confident. We have to, for some reason. Even though we don't know anything about it or why, just shut up and do it. It's infuriating. This place is really upsetting. So I don't know. Well, I don't remember what the question was, but to sum it up, it's just the spirit is really low. And the convoy, it kind of came back. People were cooped up for 2 years and felt, you know, like it was a really happy time. People were, and they're all kind of commiserating with each other. These are all people that felt the same way about what was happening. You're here in the tens of thousands. And that was the last time anything like this place felt like it should be. And I remember in the aftermath, people were like, oh man, wait till the next one. I was like, I feel like that might've been kind of a Viking funeral, if anything. That might be, you know, that's when it died. You know, maybe we bring it back and rebirth something in the future. That's better than what we have now, but the Canada I grew up in, it died right then when the government beat up all those people, war veterans and people I knew, women in the street, kicked them in the face and hit them with guns and all that stuff, dragging lifeless people out of the crowd and trampling them with horses and all that. That was the end. It'll never be the same again. And you know, you can blame it on Trudeau, but like, where was the rest? There's 338 members of parliament in that building. None of them were on the street that day. None of them had a problem with it. They all sat and watched the inquiry, which I was forced to testify at from prison. And, it's all good. We support the judge's ruling and blah, blah. Just don't rock the boat. Go along to get along. We have a career to worry about. You know, we have our elections and our politicians, and we've got to play 5D chess. These kinds of copes and excuses for not doing the radical thing that needs to be done to stop the bleeding. And instead, they just put their head in the sand and pretend, you know, just worry about yourself, essentially. And it's sad because it's like I thought I was part of a better place than that. When I was growing up, I was proud to be Canadian. You hear all these stories and all of our accomplishments and things we've done, like through the wars and all the effort it took to get here, all the heroes and people we've had. So I thought, no, we'll never go down like that. And then to see it devolve into this, it's just, you know, it's heartbreaking, but it's also infuriating at the same time because, you know, it's like the thief is still in your house. Right, it's like finding out your home has been ransacked and he's still downstairs. Like, not only are you heartbroken, but well, I'm going to get revenge if I can. You know, yeah. My family's dead in the living room. I've got nothing to lose, so I'm gonna scalp you right there in the living room floor if I get a hold of you. That's just kind of feels to be me right now. And you know, I don't know what else there is because, like I said, you can laugh or you can cry, and I'd rather be angry than depressed because angry people work and you know have a motivation, but depressed people, they give up and they kill themselves, and the government's encouraging that quite aggressively with indirect and direct means. There's even a whole program you can go apply for. Same.
Yeah. I mean, we really are living in a a crazy time, aren't we? You know, I think people could say, well, you know, you're an entertainer. This is comedians always talk like this, but everything that you're saying is true. You're not even exaggerating. So, and we all lived through this. We all saw it. I mean, Canada, it was one of the worst. I think it's pretty well established. It was the three worst were Australia, New Zealand, and Canada.
Australia was really scary. And then Canada was like the hold my beer meme. Like, we can do better than that. We'll try to take a run for it. And all the places in the world, Canada was pretty bad. I think Britain might have been the worst, but Australia was pretty bad also. I didn't see a lot of New Zealand, but I did know people, you know, they had family members trapped in Australia. They weren't allowed to leave. They weren't allowed to visit. My girlfriend, again, Morgan, she couldn't go to family members' funerals. I had a bunch of friends that like had to watch the funeral from across the street. They weren't allowed to go and say goodbye to their loved ones because medicine time. And those same politicians who were clapping along for that, thought that was a good idea, are now like, just vote for me so we can get the libs out. Get like, nope, I'd rather give you an uppercut in the mouth.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's gone
help you do anything.
It's not just the libs.
Yeah.
As you said, it's the whole political system is clearly predatory upon the legacy public.
Yeah. Yeah, we're well past that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous when you hear conservatives saying this. Like, we're going to trigger the libs. We're going to get rid of the libs. Stick it to the libs. The wokies. Well, clearly, the entire system is totally corrupt and treacherous. And, you know, when I ask about Justin Trudeau, it's because he seems to personify Canada's malaise over the last 10 years. But I realize it's not just him. If it were just him, it'd have been bumped off. Right. It's the whole lot of them. One Canadian politician that I'm aware of that spoke out against all of this was Randy Hillier. Is he still around? And what do you think of him?
He's kind of retired. And I mean, you know, I do know him. I've met him. I've been to his house, you know. It's not the 70s anymore. You know, the whole, like you said, I struggle to sympathize with anybody who's been like, if you're brand new, like you're just like, hey, is everything kind of screwed up? Like maybe we need to get involved in politics. That's acceptable if you're just figuring out now there's a problem. But if it's like 6, 7, 8 years into this and you're still like, we just got to win an election. Like you're either not paying attention or you're too stupid to be here, because that's, you know, how long do you need to be in school before you figure out 2 + 2 = 5? Political parties and politics are not going to help do anything. It's like in a casino. It's not. I speak in metaphors because I'm a madman and I have no real life experience outside of the military. So it's like a casino, you know. And you're like, well, I'm going to go this crooked casino with all stealing from people, and sometimes they drag people out back and kill them, and they're raping women upstairs, and they've got, maybe there's a child sex dungeon with Jeffrey Epstein. I don't know. Whatever. I'm going to go work at the casino and work my way up until I'm the president of the casino, and then I'm going to fix it all. Like, are you? Well, you're going to do it. You're going to spend 25 years working your way up to be president. I'm going to change. Well, you don't own the casino is what you're going to find out. Oh, you're the CEO, but you're not the owner, are you? Now you're fired. Get out. Now we put a new guy. You're just a manager, dude. You might as well just go change the management at McDonald's and think, yeah, now I'm going to sell different chicken nuggets. And I don't like, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. Is that what you think? No, you're just managing my franchise. You're not in charge of anything. Okay, so if you think you're going to work your way into a system that is totally controlled by the enemy and somehow flip it from the inside, the Kennedy family tried this in the 60s. It didn't work out very well for them. You know?
Indeed. That's an interesting point. It does seem that basically, as far as I understand, he wanted to, maybe we shouldn't go into this. I don't know. But I think he wanted to shut down the Federal Reserve. And he was also talking about blocking Israel's access to nuclear, the elements for nuclear weapons or something. I can't remember what it was now. But
Kennedy, Well, they had the Dimona nuclear facility in Israel, which they weren't supposed to have, that the Americans were aware of. They were trying to have them register as a foreign agent, APAC, American-Israeli, political influence system there. And he got smoked. Just coincidentally, his brother too was shot by a Palestinian who had two first names, who has no recollection of the events whatsoever. And he was shot. There was 8 or 9 bullets shot in a 6-round revolver somehow. And he was shot directly behind the ear is what killed him. That was this is all public. This is all out there for people to go find. And, the son, Kennedy Jr. died in a plane crash on a nice sunny day when he was competing for Hillary Clinton's seat in New York. And yeah, it just, it's not the way. You can't, it's like the viper den. You know, you can't play their game. If you can't beat the casino by working for it, you just have to build your own casino or find a way to shut the power off and raid the offices. I don't know. It's going to require outside the box thinking. And that's why I like the convoy, because this was a novel. Nobody had done this before. And I kind of did the math in my head and I'm like, I don't see why this won't work, or at the very least put a lot of pressure on them and force them to come to the table, because they can't just shut the capital city down for weeks, months. I mean, how long was this going to go on for? And it did last 3 weeks until they said, we'll just basically act as though it's World War III. It was the War Measures Act. They changed it to the Emergency Measures, but they just renamed the bill, which was the War Measures Act, which it was in case of we're at war, very serious business. We need to basically suspend rights, essentially. And that's what they did.
Yeah, it was also amazing.
And they blamed us for it. They said I was the reason, because of me and my friends in the streaming collective. They said, oh, there's a very well-organized mobile militia out there, and they're going to take over the country, and it's a big threat. So they have members here and here and here. We got to shut everything down. And they cornered the public safety minister. I think it was the National Post, the Globe and Mail. And they said, who do you mean specifically? And do you mean the Diagolon people? He's like, yeah, that's it. That's the one. To date, no one's been arrested. There's been no weapons caches discovered. There's been no charges laid. So ostensibly, I guess all these terrorists are still out there. Aren't they public safe? But again, we've moved on. Everyone's forgotten. The goldfish brain of the average Canadian has moved on to the new thing.
Ukraine. No, Gaza.
Slaughter the current thing. Yeah.
Well, a part of that with the, because you mentioned 3 weeks, and then they enacted legislation against it and so on. I remember from here, from Britain, I was obviously keeping up with it on Telegram and Twitter. We're talking about it and all this. Our guys were talking about the convoy, but it was amazing how much of a total blanket ban there was on this. The BBC just didn't report on it until, yeah. I think it had been going on for about a week, maybe longer, maybe even longer. Someone might be able to remember more precisely, but they just ignored it. They just pretended it wasn't happening. Same with the tractor protest in the Netherlands. I don't know if the BBC ever mentioned that, but I do know that for several months, there was no mention of it whatsoever on the BBC website. As I say, same with the convoy. It was like, we just won't inform the British public that this big bloody thing is happening in Canada.
The revolution will not be televised, you know? Why would they do that? People were afraid to come. I would run into people in the street that were like, people I knew, right? They'd be like, oh, I'm coming to Ottawa. Like, where, like, because they're just seeing what's on the news, which is terrorists have taken the city, and it's a fucking very stressful, you know. So they're like, but they're also curious, like, you know, they knew I was there. They're like, what? So they would come and see it, and they would just be like, it's just essentially a giant street party. There's lots of smiling, happy people that are just, you know, hanging out. that was it. And until the government decided it's violence time, and they beat the shit out of everybody and, you know, caused, I don't know how much damage and destruction, and imprisoned people and froze bank accounts and did all the tyrannical things that they do. And again, who's, heck, and Trudeau, all of them, everybody in that building can get it. I don't care. They all sat there and participated. And like I said, you're watching these seniors die alone. Like, it's a weird thing because people seem to not care about them because they're old and like they're not really involved in society anymore. Like, but that's going to be you someday, and that's going to be your children someday and your parents. And what a way to go. This is the end, right? You're basically waiting to die at that point. You're in a nursing home, like you're pretty old. Like, people don't visit you very much. You don't, and now they just lock you up and you're not allowed outside. And they would leave these people in their beds. They had bed sores, just die. You know, some of them were dead for days. Nobody bothered. A friend of mine lived next to one of these places. I said, they didn't go outside for 2 years ever. Like in the back, like where you take them out for their outside time. They just didn't because it's too dangerous, you know? I'll just move on. No, because that means I'm okay with all of that. That was, you know, wasn't a big deal. It was a big deal. It's like wars and revolutions have been started for less than that. Like what was the American Revolution was like over colonial script and a tiny tax on tea. So they just, went berserk, you know, it was an overnight thing, but, you know, and this is, that was just like, hey, you know, we're going to raise taxes. They're straight up killing your citizens, your family members and your community members. And you're like, but I don't want to be uncomfortable. That's the Canadian way. If it makes you uncomfortable, it's bad. Right. Which is, I don't know when that happened, like safe spaces, right? Emotional safety. We have to keep everybody safe and secure. And we somehow at some point commingled like negative with stress and discomfort. That they're always, they go hand in hand as like a bad thing. Like, well, exercise is stressful and painful and uncomfortable. Is that bad for you? The best lessons in you know, formative things I've ever learned in my life were in some pretty difficult circumstances where we're not easy and we're not comfortable at all. But I wouldn't be who I am today without them. And now we have a society that puts up, Joe Rogan said this once, you got rounded edges and smooth corners everywhere. It's like there's bubble wrap on everything. Like no one's allowed to even, you know, it's like you started with seatbelts and now it's all the way to this. And yeah, we have a society full of cowards and pussies. And that's probably why, because they've been told from a young age, it's certainly my generation. It's everyone's been very emasculated and feminized and feminism this and toxic male that. And I kind of escaped a lot. I was just in the army bubble for so long. But when I got out, it was like, when I went in, I was 16, 17 years old. Now I'm like in my early 30s. And, you know, you go home. I wasn't like never home or anything, but you're living on army bases. All your friends are soldiers. Like, that's really all you talk about. That's your whole life. And then you get out and it's like, this is not the way I left it. And the kinds of guys and men that were in charge then don't seem to be around anymore. And instead, there's a lot of liberal arts majors and fat women yelling about statues and like, what is going on? You know, it's okay. Oh, you don't like a historical event happened. That's fine. But why are you tearing everything down? Like, that's a statue of the prime minister who founded the country. Like, that's no, he's sitting, there's a box over him right now. I think in Toronto, Sir John A. Macdonald's just a box over him, because to see him would be traumatic, right? It would be traumatic. Blair Cottrell's a guy that I follow in Australia. I don't know if you've ever spoken to him. I've never talked to him, but, a great tweet the other day about that, you know, trauma. He's like, I hate that word. And I just, you know, it was so good because it was like, he's like, trauma is when, you know, you hit a roadside bomb and your friends get vaporized and you wake up with no skin in a hospital in Ramstein, Germany. That's traumatic. That's trauma. Like someone being mean to you is not trauma. You know, getting yelled at work is not traumatic. You know, being someone groped you at a bar while unpleasant and, you know, probably illegal. It's not traumatic. It's not, you know, shouldn't ruin your life. You shouldn't be that weak that it destroys you. So we've raised a generation of people that are easily like broken by the smallest of things. And yeah, it's a wonder they don't want to stand up and stick up for themselves, because the idea of fighting is so scary to them, because if you're fighting, you get hit back. You know, if you're actually fighting, they're going to hit you back. You don't get in a rant. You want to hit a punching bag is what you want to do. These guys are like, I'm all for fighting, but I don't want to do this or that, because, you know, they say, well, then the government will do this, or they'll put us on watch list, or they'll do, they could do a lot of things. It's like, I'm going to get in the cage, but what if he kicks me in the head and I had a concussion? What if he breaks my nose or my ribs, or what if this and what if that? And what, well, then don't fight, because there's no way to, like, that's a risk you take. If you're going to oppose these people, they will come after you. They came after me pretty hard. They've been coming after me and my friends. You know, we're still here. We're alive. It's okay for now, you know, but that's either do it or don't. It's not an excuse just to be like, well, bad things could happen. It's not a reason to not fight. You know, and like it or not, like the fight is here. Like they're hitting you. It's not up to you. Like if there's no, like you're already in the ring, whether you want to be or not, and you're just getting dummied, hit and smacked in the face. You're like, I gotta stop. They don't want to stop. Like you must defend yourself or they will beat you to death. And that's just, you know, like two steps forward, one step back. You know, maybe they'll take it easy on it for a round or two and just push you around so they catch their breath. And then they come back and then they go right back to beating your face in. And you're just like, well, is anybody stopping this? Who's supposed to stop it? You're in there with them, with the enemy. It's you. This is your fight. Do something about it or die. You know, life doesn't tolerate weakness, as they say. And we're weak. So the antidote is we have to strengthen ourselves. I think that's why instinctively a lot of the guys are gravitating toward these active club, you know, type ideas when that, you know, kind of started becoming popular in the last few years. And I immediately, you know, saw the value in that. I was like, this is something that has to happen. You know, initially we started, they were like, we're building a terrorist network. No, we were just finding community people that were fans of the podcast, the community, and we'd have like IRL, you know, come have a barbecue, because we weren't allowed to do anything for years. And we started doing that, and that helps. But, you know, especially the men, like, who's supposed to defend your society and your women and children if the men don't do it? There's the nurses union supposed to show up, or cab drivers, or like, what group, what demographic of people are supposed to like take control of this? Like, I wish people would stand up. What people specifically? Men, able-bodied men is who you mean, right? That's how it is. And if the average able-bodied man is fat, depressed, and addicted to booze and just only cares about sports, it shouldn't be a mystery as to why you're getting run over. So then the antidote has to be, we've got to fix that. You got to rebuild these guys, and doing difficult, you know, physical things, getting prioritizing your health physically, first of all. You know, we like to say, you know, if you're a nationalist, you're part of a nation, you're just one cell of a body made up of many, and you are just responsible for your end, for you. And if you're like, I'm a sick, gross, drug addicted, unemployed, like, you're not really helping, right? And these are the people online on Twitter with anonymous accounts. Well, I just think blah, blah, blah. Like, are you obese? What does that matter? It matters. Trust me. Are you? You know, answer the question. So you can't even control your portion of the country, which is you, at the smallest micro level. Let's worry about that first. If you get that under control, you get healthy, you get strong, you start, you know, getting physically healthier and stronger, you'll become mentally stronger, your spirit will start to kind of come alive again, and get a little bit of motivation, some momentum. You're like, I'm getting somewhere, I'm making progress, this is exciting. Mixed in with some challenging things. People aren't often a fan of physical combat. You know, you do a little bit of sparring, or maybe they just do rucksack marching or hike or rock climbing, something that sucks a little bit. You know, you do it as a group together, it's character building, it's good for you. And this raises the spirits, it bonds the guys together, and it starts to rebuild and recreate something that we used to have in our societies, where we had, you know, men's clubs. It wasn't a weird thing. You know, we had all over the place, and those are just gone now. They don't exist, and there's nowhere for them to go. Everything is an inclusive, safe, you know, everything's basically off limits to you. You're a straight white male, you know, you're the enemy. That was one of the original monologues. I was like, that might be what I'll go with. I'll go with privileged white male or something. But yeah, it's just did we used to have when people were healthy? Let's go back to that. What worked in grandpa's day? You know, let's try that.
Yeah. I mean, life has certainly become too easy, but it's also become too feminized. I mean, as you say, there are no male spaces anymore. Women are just everywhere, because that's the result of feminism. But in part of that is that everything has just become too pampered. And so nobody really knows. I mean, this is bad for our generation. I think it's even worse for the Zoomers, that they don't really know how to deal with a challenge and how to get back up again after you've fallen, after you've been knocked down.
They don't even have the strength to follow their own instincts. I saw, you know, it's a news article from somewhere, but it was circulated on 4chan, you know, because it's like a staple. You have to monitor 4chan because there's always, you know, a lot of 95% garbage, but every once in a while there's a good nugget in there of something that you wouldn't find elsewhere. And it was you know, certain percentage of, like 60%, a crazy high number, have never approached a woman ever. Like 25-year-old men, and like, yeah, I just, no, I don't. You've never, you know, like, I understand it's intimidating or kind of, you know, nervous if you're 16, you know, you've never done it, but you've never been able, your instinct is supposed to push you over that. Like, I mean, you have hormones, you have, like, do you not want to get laid? Like, it's a honest question. Like, you're not, when I was that age, that was pretty much all I cared about. Like, that was my top priority, is like, I don't have a woman and I want one and I'm going to get one. And now I need a job to make that happen. So that was basically, that was, you know, that's, most guys are, if they'll admit it or not, but they don't even have the internal, you know, constitution to approach them. They won't even talk to them. But I guess, you know, we also, that's rape now too, right? It's, everyone's so afraid, you know, everyone's afraid to talk to each other, or he's afraid to do anything, or afraid of consequence, afraid of this, afraid of that. We just live in a cesspool of fear. So again, how do you dispel that? You build strong men, and they go, the fear is always there, but a strong guy will do it anyway. A weak one will use as an excuse not to.
That's a whole other thing that is probably related, that people are weak. So you have this culture now of young men are afraid to approach women. Young women don't know. The whole stuff that used to happen naturally just hasn't happened with pretty much a whole generation of people. Yeah. They don't know what it is to go on a date. They don't know what it is to flirt and so on.
It's just weird to me, because it was like, it didn't happen naturally in school. Like, you didn't.
Yeah, but I think like, this is the most natural thing in the world. Surely this just takes care of itself. But it doesn't, if men aren't manly enough.
I remember the first like social event in my school. I think I was like in grade four or something, or younger than that. It was like one of these dances, you know, they have the school. And it's like the boys are all on one side and all the girls are all over there. And everybody's just kind of staying away from each other because it's awkward and weird. But like, even at that age, you're kind of interested a little, you know, and that's just, but that's all, everyone's just on their phones now. So there's, I guess they don't, I was talking about this with Morgan the other night at basically all of how you become stronger as a, not just a man, but, you know, women too, as a person, is you have to do difficult things. You have to grow and strengthen yourself and, you know, evolve through trauma, you know, air quotes, but difficult, you know, challenges. And we've just taken all those away. So basically, and I learned this because I went through it myself. I was very comfortable middle-class kid. I was, you know, well taken care of, a couple of fist fights at school kind of thing, but I wasn't a farm kid or, you know, I didn't work in a mine or anything like that. But I was really interested in the Army and I wanted to do that. So I joined it. I was 17. I was probably 120 pounds, rail thin and soft as a, you know, cookie, you know, and I just held on for the passion of the job. I just really wanted to be there. But the first couple of years was rough. I was way behind. And it took me several years of this to catch up, to just be like one of the normal dudes in the platoon. It's like, now I'm at regular guy level in the Army. And it took several years because until then I was 16, 17, but mentally I was a 12-year-old. I'd never done anything hard ever. I was playing video games, going to school, and that was it. I never even slept in the woods. I never had done anything like that. And I knew that. And I didn't like that about myself. I was like, I don't want to be like this. I want to be like that guy or those guys. Or so how do I do that? I'm going to go do the things they do. And then maybe I'll end up more like them. It just seemed like obvious problem solving. But yeah, we've removed anything that would challenge you or make you grow. Is just, it's bad because it's uncomfortable. So it must be bad. And this is the radical feminism that's taken over, where it's just mothering to death. Everything is just coddling everyone like they're a little baby. So it's not that there's, you know, I don't have a problem with, I love women. I don't have a problem with them, but the idea that they should just run everything is insane. You know, some of them are capable, but oftentimes they're not really suited to it, but there are some that do, but at the cost of that is subtract all the male energy out of every decision. Like, there's none. The men you do have are emasculated little like wieners. Like, look at, you know, Trudeau's probably the most masculine man in that building, which is saying something. Like, he probably is. Compared to the rest of them, at least he boxes, you know, they don't even do that. So there's no, that energy, that spirit of like, you know, masculine energy, like, no, that's wrong. We're not doing that. Or, you know, tell that guy to go fuck himself. Or do we need to go down and deal with this? You know, angry dad mode. Like, when the kids are out of control and their mom's overwhelmed, I don't know what to do. Well, then dad gets off the couch, he puts a newspaper down, and then, you know, then it's time. We don't have that anymore. So we're being bullied because dad's not here anymore. So we either, if we can't find him, then we have to be him, you know? And if we don't know how to do that, we better figure it out fast or we're not going to survive.
Yeah. 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 I think that this is another aspect of the feminization, that male authority has been undermined. Men have been told, don't be like that. I don't even know what parenting advice is like nowadays, but fuck me, it must be pretty bad about discipline and so on. Because you can see it. I mean, you can see it, the way that kids behave now. Is, again, I know I sound like an old goat saying that, but there clearly has been a decline. I think that just in general, society has become too female-centric. And so the position of the white male has been completely undermined. But that's exactly, it's doing what it says on the tin. I mean, they're constantly saying white men are, like, our society is too white male centric, too patriarchal, too Eurocentric. So it's not surprising that
in white people countries, it's too white, too Euro.
I know.
Too many Japanese.
Yeah, presumably you saw that clip from Scotland of this Pakistani, the Hamza Yousaf, and he was saying it's too white. Scotland's too white. Yes. It's a very famous one.
I went off on him. I was like, bro, get out. I'm more Scottish than you'll ever be. Like, I am ethnically, most of my family traced through, like, Culloden, I think, Dingwall is where my father traced our last known, you know, ancestry to his brother. Well, I mean,
Even your name, he's Mackenzie versus Yousaf. I mean, you know.
Right. Yeah. And he's like, I speak Scotland. I'm like, but you don't, because you're not Scottish. You'll never be Scottish because, and that was the thing. Like, I didn't know this, right? I grew up believing all the same liberal propaganda as everybody else. And I just never thought about it. They go, well, where you're born, you get a passport, and that's what you are at the end. I never thought about it past that until you're challenged to by, you know, the bad guys, and you know, you kind of wrestle with it, and eventually you're like, no, it is what it is. It makes sense. There's science to support this as well. You know, a golden retriever is not a poodle, is it? Like, well, they're all dogs. All dogs are dog. Like, but they're not, though. Like, they are all dogs, but they're not all the same. All birds are bird. Like, no, they aren't. You know, an owl is not a crow, and so on. And to try to say that they are, not only is that insulting to all, it strips away their identities and what makes them special and interesting in the first place. Like, would you rather have just one bird or all of the different ones?
It's the same with human beings. Either diversity matters, in which case people really are different, and that has pluses and minuses, or diversity is just a meaningless load of bollocks, so why are you even celebrating it?
Yeah. This is why they'll never let us, you know, get us in the ring, so to speak, where like a long form, a conversation like this, like imagine one of these politicians on like a Joe Rogan type, where it's like, it's just me and you for the next 3 hours. Like they would get cut to ribbons because they'd have no answers for any of this. And they don't. They just soundbite, prepared statement, cut the, you know, ban, censor, suppress. They're imbeciles. Like the people running everything have no idea what's going on. They couldn't navigate their way out of their own house probably without somebody helping them. And when you put it to them, like, well, what is a Japanese person? You know, and they're like, well, it's like you have an idea in your head, right? When I say Japanese man, what do you picture? Do you picture a white guy with a red beard? Well, why not? Well, you know, if I tell you a Mexican, like, do you think of Canelo Alvarez, who's a white guy with a red beard? He's nationally Mexican, but, you know, he's a redheaded white guy. So these things are so. Like we're animals too. We're a life form on this planet, like everything else. So why is it different? Like scientists can tell by the bones what race and sex and gender who these people are. Like, so that's not real, or is it? Like, it's just nonsense. It's just a vapor nebula of nonsense. And it's not challenged by anyone because they're afraid of, well, what if my career and my political, no fight in them at all. There's no masculine energy at all. There's no, you know, some guys like to fight because they enjoy the, I don't know if I'm going to win or not. It excites them. They like that. Where's that at? Where'd that go? I grew up with guys like this and now I don't know where they all went. Maybe we just tell everybody mandatory steroids. Like, I don't know what we got to do, but something, you know, the average male testosterone is down like 35% or something from like 1980. You see pictures of guys like when my dad was, you know, in high school, they have like mustaches and huge shoulders and like 16, 17 years old. They're men now, you know. I mean, the average 20-year-old man is basically a 13-year-old boy, but, you know, physically, which is, you know, it's not here or there. It's many of them. Like, what is happening to us? What is going on? Don't talk about it. Don't mention it. You know, it's bad. I don't know how to reach people or get over that. I just, you know, go on my podcast and yell to them red in the face sometimes and mix it in with some humor and some stories and stuff and try it. And we've had, you know, pretty good success. It's done well. It's been, you know, it wasn't overnight, but it was just a little bit at a time or consistently year after year. And you get to a point where you're lucky enough to have and retain an audience. But man, you know, then that's despite all the suppression, the censorship, the banning, the smear. I've probably been slandered more than anyone in national history. As a person, unjustly. I don't mean like Robert Pickett or serial killers or something, right? Like I didn't do anything and I was charged 23 times with 23 offenses in 5 different cases across 3 different provinces all at the same time for talking, essentially. That's the reason. That's the real reason if they want to get honest about it. But I criticized the RCMP, so they came after me. I criticized the police, so they attacked me. And they wanted to make me understand that you don't do that and we're in charge, you know. Which is just all that did was confirm to me that you are exactly what I thought you were. You're worse, actually, than I thought you were. Because I thought even you wouldn't go that far. I mean, you can not like me. You can, you know, be rude or take your time if I call the cops. But you're not going to just go full-blown Stasi. Like, that's great. No, they did. They totally did. And then I, you know, I'm like leaking their group chat messages. I, you know, they really don't like me and I don't like them. But, you know, for now, it seems to be, we seem to be at a not a ceasefire. But we'll see how long that lasts.
All right. Well, we'll do some super chats. Friendly neighborhood such and such says, big Merry Christmas to the both of you. Meeting and hanging out with Jeremy was one of the highlights of 2024. and he's laid the groundwork for the type of change this country needs, bringing together all the right type of people and making communities possible. There we go. Very good.
Thanks, man.
And then Alabama Hot Pockets. Is it a meme, or is there actually any possibility of a Wexit movement, Quebec taking a hike, or any form of balkanization of Canada? What do you think?
Well, we narrowly avoided it in the 90s. Quebec was very, very close to like seceding from Canada. I think, I don't remember the exact, what the discrepancy was. I was in element, like a like grade school at the time, but it was close. It was on the news a lot. I could tell the adults were all very, there's a lot of anxiety. It was, you know, it was pretty close, but they didn't allow it. You know, I would suspect, I haven't looked into it, but I would be very suspicious to find out. I would not be surprised to find out, like, there was a lot of shenanigans and rigging and nonsense going on to make sure that Quebec did not get what they wanted, like to, that the secessionists did not succeed. I don't think the same would happen with Alberta or any, you know, it would be, you know, it would be used as a leveraging bargaining tool with anything. They would maybe have this sentiment, have a Wexit party, like, we're going to leave, we're going to, they're not serious, they just want concessions, and Ottawa will do, you know, and then it'll just come to an agreement at maximum. Like, there's no way. America wouldn't allow, if anything, they would, America would just steal the state. It'd be like, Alberta's ours now. That's is what would happen, you know, so, which isn't good for us. And I think that any attempt, like, to balkanize the country is a mistake. I think that's what they want to do, because it's much more easier to deal with smaller pockets of people, like, deal with Alberta as itself, or deal with all of Canada plus Alberta. You know, all of Canada plus Quebec and Alberta, you know, that's a bigger, you know, fish to fry than it is just one province at a time. You know, let's split them all up. And it's like, do you think they'll leave you alone? You think the Empire, Palpatine, is going to go, oh, shit. Oh, did you vote? Oh, my God. I didn't know they voted. Jimmy, get over here. They see. Oh, well, I guess that's it. They're on their own now. Let them. No, you've just now lost the protection of the rest. Now you're out in the woods on your own, and the predators are still out there. And you think, oh, I'll be fine now, because I'm not with the big pack of sheep being attacked by the wolves. I'll just trot off on my own with two other sheep, and we'll just, yeah, you'll be fine, I'm sure. It's a mistake. And I think it's, I think it's a big mistake, actually.
All right. BMC says, great stream and guest. Hail Diagolon. Thank you very much. That was a nice super chat. And then Kevin says, salute. I miss running into you at the convoy, but much respect. Do you think starting culturally focused clubs might also be a good idea? Even something like a classic scouting organization. When I was a kid, I was in the Scouts until they made it gay.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'm sure. I mean, I wish. I'm not aware of anything if it does exist. Like I said, like we've started our own here. You can go to secondsons.org is the website for our organization, you know, not brand new, but fairly. We did this, tour. I think that's what the other guy was referencing, when I was up this summer. We just kind of, it was like half stand-up comedy, half kind of speaking tour, kind of just basically what I do on my podcast. You know, and part of me is like, I appreciate it. Like I said, as a natural comedian, that's what I wanted to do originally. I was like, maybe I'll try that. I'll give him a hand at that. But and it is nice. You know, you like to make people laugh. It's, you know, it makes you feel good, and they're happy, and it's a positive thing. I think it's important. I think it's good for your health. You have to have a good laugh every once in a while, or it's, you know, but you know, it only goes so far. And you know, my passion is more towards like justice, you know, like righteous things need to happen. So I'm more like the Joker, really, in that sense. I think I'll you just be making jokes about it while I burn down the city or whatever. The RCMP is going to take that clip now. He threatened the city, you know. But we did that, and like we got to meet a lot of people, and you know, did pretty well. We sold a lot of tickets. We did pretty good. I was happy with it, and then we took, you know, almost all of that, and I've, you know, reinvested it now into this club, and we spent a substantial amount of money on things, you know, just banners and flags. I mean, it adds up fast, you know. So I'm just, so when people are like, you know, when we get, you know, to be a regular, you know, more regular thing, people are, well, these are, you know, the Fed accusations will come, and where did get all this stuff, must cost them, where did it come from? I just explained where it came from, so anybody's curious, that's where, you know, and it's like a crazy concept. And be like, you would, you know, no, other people are supposed to pay for this. If you want to do it, then you do it. You know, put up or shut up. You care so much. What have you done? What are you doing? You're just complaining online. Like, I don't want to be that guy. I'd rather try and fail and be like, well, you know, it's better than trying and failing is better than just sitting around complaining. And then, you know, your life passes you by. Next thing you know, you're 50 and it's like, I should have did something. But, well, you're going to live with that. And you're in the stomach until the end, and now it's too late. And yeah, so I think the question is about like cultural clubs and stuff. So yeah, that's one of them, and it's just based around, you know, our common interests and shared views on nationalism in the country and in Canada and ourselves and as men especially, because again, I don't really know how to help the women, because I'm not one, and it's not really my forte. But I think having stronger, more positive, healthier men is a start. I think that would help them and has certainly helped their families. And I think that's that's who we are. Like, groups and communities of men are what the country is, you know. And we've all been isolated and atomized and reduced to just, you're all just individuals. You're all just, and this was something I said on the tour, was you know, when I was a kid, it was, you know, in school growing up, it was always, well, what are you going to do when you graduate? What school are you going to go to? Who are you going to get married to? Where are you going to live? What kind of job are you? You. There was never a talk of we. The we didn't even exist as a concept. It was all just us as individuals in this kind of weird casino trying to collect coins and things, and whoever gets the most stuff to sit on is the winner, I guess. It never really made a lot of sense to me, and it doesn't make sense because it is nonsense. But yeah, that kind of sense of collective identity, like, it's important because we're being attacked as a collective, and if we don't come together as one to defend ourselves as a collective, we will lose, because you're not fighting individuals. It's not one guy. It's not just Justin Trudeau. It's the entire everything behind him. And you want to? What are you going to do? You're going to build a cabin in the woods and what? You know, like, well, I'm going to, you know, and then there's other guys doing this. Well, I'm going to have a homestead, and you're going to grow cucumbers for other guys that could show up with guns and to take them from you. What's going to happen? If you study what happened in Rhodesia, what's happening in South Africa, all those people die. They don't make it, because they're just, the four sheep go off into the woods on their own, and they're eaten very quickly and very easily. So yeah, well, any kind of group or club or anything that's, you know, with an eye to like home team first, I think is definitely needed for sure. And I think there is an appetite for it. We haven't really started advertising yet. To try and, you know, get people involved, because, you know, you got to build it from the ground up. You know, trust is number one. I'm only going to work with people who I know and have been known for a while, that I know they're not bad actors. They're solid. They're friends. Like, we're, you know, and work with that, and then, you know, slowly work your way up. But just minor notices and mentions here and there, like, we get like 10 emails a day from guys all over the country, like where, when, you know. So there's a lot of interest, and there's a lot of other smaller groups, you know, kind of popping up here and there across the country. It's just kind of an instinct. Like, the guys kind of understand, like, we need to, like, get to get, like, you know, there's just this kind of unspoken and like a just an energy of that it makes sense to a lot of guys. They see that and they go, there's something here that makes a lot of sense. And that's just how things have always been done. It's never been one guy on his own. You know, like George Washington was, I just learned this recently. I don't know if it's true, or I think it is. He was the richest man in America when the revolution started. So, you know, but he's just one guy. He didn't do it by himself. You know, one guy with $1 billion isn't enough. You know, Elon Musk could, if, you know, I don't think he's on our team, but if he wanted to, he would fail. It's him with all his money versus the empire. You can't win on your own. You're only so tall on your own. If you're going to fight a giant machine full of tens of thousands of people working against you, well, then you also need a giant machine full of tens of thousands of people to compete with them, or you're not going to make it.
I'll tell you who disagrees with you on this is Jordan Peterson.
So, oh, did his benzodiazepines tell him to say that? He's a hack. So I don't think, yeah, Jordan Peterson. Well, it's like, you know, it's like the bloody Bible, you know, like 1 minute you're like, oh, yeah. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, what the dude. I listen to some of the things he says and I'm like, this man is not that intelligent. He's just kind of a train wreck. He's just kind of all over the place and is very logically inconsistent. He's intellectually dishonest. My favorite Jordan Peterson clip that a lot of people haven't seen is when he's asked about Alexander Solzhenitsyn's books at a speaking tour, and he knows
I can't do it.
Yeah, he knows the answer to this question, and it's an anti-Semitic question, and he paces around the stage and then he stops, you know, and people are like booing the guy that asked the question, and he's just thinking, and then he just goes, I can't do it. And like, so it was like right then, that was the battle for his soul, and he gave up. And now he's a very rich man. He's very wealthy now since that. Now he's been carrying water for the Daily Wire and everybody else, and he's doing very well. And by the way, you know, they're like, oh, poor Jordan Peterson is persecuted. I think he's worth $100 million at this point. Before he started working for the Daily Wire, he was pulling millions of dollars a year, like $5-7 million a year, something he was making. He's like, well, it's very hard to make money. I'm very proud of how much money I've made. So they take away his psychology license or something, or suspend it because he needs re-education. So he launches not only a Give, Send, Go also a GoFundMe for the peasants to pay for his legal fees with money he could find in his pocket or his sock. He needs $50,000 to pay for legal fees. Are you going to practice psychology again, Jordan? Really? You're going to go back to that? You're selling out stadiums for $700 a seat to sit there and go, well, you know, it's like nebulous, vague nonsense. You're not doing psychology. So why do you care? And why are you making these people who are broke pay for your... who have you paid, Jordan? Like, all these guys are locked up in coots. You have all these people... political prisoners are all over the country. You don't have to look far to find one. We have... There's many big cases. You have Sean Hartman is a guy who's leading a civil suit against these vaccine companies because his son died as a result of the vaccine. We had several doctors confirm, yeah, that's what happened. Kayla Pollock is another woman, paralyzed from this. Like, hey, Jordan, why don't you chip them 10 grand? No! Like, okay. Well, we've raised, just me and my friends have raised all, like probably $350,000 for various causes and various people over the last few years. We could have used that ourselves for anything, but that's what we did. And you couldn't even be bothered. And you're asking people to pay you. Wow, buddy. You know, like, so I've no respect for him at all as a man, as anything. I think he's pathetic.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's like a car crash.
Yeah. What do you think about Peterson? Nothing. Nothing at all. I don't think about him.
I did think that might trigger a response.
So disappointing, man. You know, we can't have anybody. Anybody that does pop up, they just they're very quickly coerced or corralled in. Yeah, I think he's not ready. You know, like he did come to. I mean, he was on the money at first, and then I think he saw the money after. And I don't think people realize the size or the scope of the fight that they're in. And when they start to see, they kind of look over the horizon and they go, "Holy shit, that's a lot of Mongolian." Horse archers, I don't think I want to be a part of this anymore. And they just walk away. But other people, I mean, I've been kind of cognizant of this since, like I said, this snowmobile crash. I kind of got a look behind the curtain and saw, like, oh my God, like I had kind of a, like I remember the moment I was standing in my bathroom in my uniform going to work and I'm just looking at myself in the mirror and I was like, I'm the bad guy. Like everything, none of it's real. And it's just like all of my friends, like these guys are dead for nothing. And it is for nothing. We just left that place, and the people we were fighting against have total run over it. So what was the point of all that? Nobody ever apologized for that. All these guys watched, everything that they put their... I know guys that did 5-7 deployments, and buried how many people, and then the suicides continue. Nobody apologized. Nobody said, sorry, Canadian soldier. Like, Trudeau didn't go on TV. Nobody offered even hey, are you guys okay? Are you doing? We asked, 15 to 20 years of your life to go to this hellhole and it all kind of went up in smoke and you're watching it all come apart live on TV and we left all the people behind who we said we would save, but we didn't. We left them to die and all this horrible, it was a horrible nightmare. And fuck you. We don't really care. We're Slavaing Ukraine right now. So we need you to go Slava over there and make no mention of this, which was not very long ago. This was, just 10 years ago. This wasn't 1950. Like this was just 10 minutes ago, historically. And they're like already looking forward to the next thing. So I can't remember how. Anyway, so it's like all of that, I had to swallow all this. So these people are like, they can't, police and politicians. And, I have people say like, well, you got to understand, it's hard for people to accept this stuff. It's really hard for them. And I'm like, yeah, it is hard, but I did it. And I did it. I came from there. I mean, how many funerals I've been to? That feels, to that all, it's like a montage, like a movie, like all the memories and you're like, fuck, time to go get a bottle of whiskey. Cause I'm going to have an evening to myself here now. Cause I don't know how I feel about this, but so I don't have any sympathy for these people. Like the healthcare workers, for example, like what we just went through, like, well, what am I supposed to do? Except that this is all, yes, that is what you're supposed to do. And you just didn't have the parts to do it. So what do you want people to do? Basic stuff, tell the truth, do what's right. Even if it is harmful to you, because that's the cost. If there was no cost, then what does it matter? Always do the right thing, unless it's going to be bad for you, inconvenient. Then don't do it. Is that what we're teaching people? I guess so.
Fuck knows what we're teaching kids nowadays. I hardly dare think about it.
That boys are girls, and everyone has a penis until they cut it off and change their name to Sarah. That's. Teaching, raising them right.
Mr. Cholley said, Merry Christmas, Jeremy, and the Plaid Army. Hail Diagolon from Tennessee. There we go. Wow. Thank you, and Merry Christmas, Mr. Cholley. Yeah. All right, there are a few others here. Cocaine Rim Job. Are you familiar with him?
Yes, unfortunately.
Right, okay.
Oh, he's a funny margin. Yeah,
he's familiar with you. He's saying,
he likes saying to me,
why are you interviewing this Fed Kenzie? Yeah. He doesn't even yell at empty buildings or grift like a real freedom fighter.
Yeah, right. I get that a lot. It's so funny to me. It's just a cope, right? Guys want it. Everyone that's doing anything is a Fed. Like, yes, it was all just to get you. I went through five different criminal prosecutions. I spent $309,000 on legal fees. I was nearly killed in prison. There was a murder attempt on me because they said all this shit in the news. He's a white supremacist. He's a baby. He's a federal agent. He's a snitch. All this. There's only newspapers and the TV in the jail, and they made sure that was on every single one. So it was not safe anywhere. There was some problem. All of that was in all the court dates and all the appearances, and all of this is an elaborate ruse so that anonymous people on Twitter are tricked into not drinking and going to the gym. It's very sinister. It's very fucking bad. He got me. What? I'm busted, you know. Feds, said the booze bag, you know. It's funny. I take it as a compliment at this point, because if people are like, oh, that's probably the government. It's like, so what I'm doing is so effective that you think the government must be behind it. Wow. Thank you. Cool.
All right. I don't think you're a Fed. I don't think Cocaine Rim Job does either. I think he's being facetious.
He's just being a dick, yeah. He came. He came to the show dressed in some fun costumes.
Okay, I can imagine. Black Pigeon Pilled. Does Jeremy have any thoughts on the Canadian philosopher from an outsider perspective? It really seems after his death, the country went to hell for the reasons he outlined in Lament for a Nation back in 1965. I think this might. He hasn't. I think he's typoed and hasn't included the name. Right, it's George Grant. Do you know anything about George Grant?
No, I mean, that was kind of before my time. I learn stuff every day. I just learned recently that we had there was a cop or like a border agent, like some kind of federal service agent in Vancouver who was stopping basically Sikh terrorists from coming into Vancouver, and was like, no, you're not coming in here. There's some kind of trial or some kind of court. And then they assassinated him. They walked in the courtroom and just killed him right there in the courtroom. And they had a big funeral state. It was huge. There's pictures of this. There's streets are covered, thousands and thousands of people, Canadian flags everywhere honoring this guy. And now, you know, they run our government, you know, and back then it was like, if we let in this boatload of 200 people, that'll be 2,000. Then there's 200,000. They're never going to stop. They're going to take all of our shit. They only care about themselves and they're just here to steal. That was back in 1915 or whatever this was. And now it's like, no, they were all wrong. What's the worst could happen? Well, we lost Brampton. We lost Surrey. We lost a third of the House of Commons. We're losing every day. We're losing billions of dollars. We're losing lives. People are getting killed on the highways all the time. People driving semi-trucks. I saw a video the other day, guys driving, going this way. It's like a divided highway. But one lane's going that way and the other one's going this way. He looks over to his, and he's, a semi-truck is going parallel to him, wrong way down the highway. Like, this is a common occurrence. These videos are every day. They're going off overpasses. They're going slamming into houses. There was one was like a 10-car wreck in Brampton the other day. You know, and we're paying for this. We have to pay for it financially. The police have to deal with it. The hospital bills have to deal with it. The criminal court case, the prosecutors have to deal with all this stuff instead of chasing actual criminals. It's not just the financial, the actual cost of having these people here is catastrophically high. It's far beyond like, this is what we can tolerate. And this is what we're asked to tolerate. It's not like there's not even a question. Like, well, you know, the government, well, we'll have some less immigration. No, we need no more. We need to stop it entirely. And we need to deport at least 10 million people right now. That's the start. That's the start. Well, that's extreme. Yeah, we're in an extreme situation, buddy. People are getting killed every day. You know, we're basically at war and not defending ourselves. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. If you're not ready, if you can't wrap your head around this at this point, then you're just a coward, I think. I think you just don't want to accept reality, or you'll wait until it happens to you, and then you'll be a victim. You know, it's just like, that's the Canadian way. I was just saying this on my show the other day, that when we deployed to Afghanistan, I didn't go initially. I joined the Army in 2003, so I missed the initial invasion, you know. But the guys that went there in 2001 and 2002, they deployed, it was called the ILTIS. It was like a light utility jeep, essentially. It was meant for like from like the Korean War days, and it's for like ferrying around logistic, yeah, take some fuel over there and go deliver lunch to the boys at the range kind of thing. I was like, this is not a frontline war fighting vehicle. Like, you can't deploy the guys with this. I'm like, oh yeah, it'll be fine. Like, no, they're going to get killed. And then a bunch of them got killed because of this, you know, they're basically driving around a Jeep Patriot as a, you know, like, okay, then I guess we'll have to buy some, you know, APCs or whatever stuff. It's like, well, they could have still been alive had you done your job, but apparently people have to die in this place before anybody cares. And even then, is it politically advantageous to do that? You know, it was probably going to happen because the conservatives got to wag their finger at the liberals or something, right? And vice versa, it had been the liberals, the conservatives wouldn't have done it. It's all just, they play games with their lives. And it's the most infuriating thing to watch happen on a daily basis, and doubly so to watch everybody support and cheer them on. You know, that they have any support at all. Like, what do you want us to do? I want you to disengage entirely. I don't want you to vote. I don't want you to give them a dollar. I don't want you to share their shit. I want you to leave the party. I want you to walk away like you would walk away from a bad restaurant and never go there again. Because they need us. We don't need them. They need our support and consent and our money to have what they have. If we take it away from them, what are they going to do? Like, what would happen if 2 million people voted in an election of, you know, like no one votes because everyone understands it's just a waste. It's stupid. You know, they have no legitimacy then. Like, well, I was elected by who? Nobody, really. You know, like, why 2% of the population said so? I don't care. Like, to sell any kind of, you know, remedies in that scenario is a lot easier to do than, you know, if people believe they have a legitimate government. I don't believe we do. I think we're totally occupied. I don't think anything about this is legit at all across the board, because, you know, you're in Scotland, or you've got you guys in England, in Ireland, in France, in Germany, in Sweden, in Norway, in Iceland. I don't know how bad Iceland is. United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, all these places all at the same time all thought, you know what, let's all do the same things. Let's all censor speech, take all the guns, mass immigration, all the wars, pro-Slava, Ukraine, all of this, despite all of our different histories and languages and cultures and religions and all of that, apparently we're all the same now. Like, well, that isn't obviously true. What it does suggest is that there is a central governing body over all of these peoples, though. So that if you think you're just going to change the McDonald's shift manager, or we're going to get a different casino pit floor boss, and that's going to, it's not going to do anything, right? And you're like, well, we just got to vote. No, we don't got to vote. We have to do the opposite. We have to go around or underneath or over something. But doing more of the same that got us here is the definition of insanity.
Yeah, I mean, the system knows how to absorb new people and rebels and just transform them into assets for itself.
We had the reform party in whatever that was. I caught some of your stream with Alex last night, Ferryman's Toll, great guy, and that you guys were talking about. Yeah, that was the reform party. That was Stephen Harper and those guys who eventually became prime minister. They just got absorbed and eaten by the conservatives, so it was pointless. Like, nothing got reformed. It was never about that. It was about, I want to be in the club. I want to join the team. This is not about Canada. It's about me. And that's what all politicians are doing. We have the PPC here in Canada. It's the same thing. If they were offered, well, we'll just roll you into the conservatives right now, they would take it and they would do it. I promise you. Oh, we wouldn't. Yes, you would. You're weak people, and just to have a small sniff of a taste of power, you'd be right in there, you know?
And reform over here now, I think.
Yeah, they're not actually, you know, swinging for the fences or anything. They just want to see how far they can get for themselves personally. And then once they, you know, if they get enough power that they can bargain and leverage, then they'll have to cut a deal and rope them in. And then that's what happens. And I think that's exactly, if the PPC even did succeed to any degree, like, oh, they won 9 or 12 seats. Well, don't be surprised if a couple of years later, well, now those are blue conservative seats, because it's just, we've come to an understanding. I bet you have. Yeah. A lot of that going around.
Yeah. Co-opted. All right. Liquid Zoo says, my first millennial, great to see Jeremy and Ferry here, and also hearing voices who are new to me. Thank you, Merry Christmas, and good Yule. Well, thank you very much, Liquid Zoo. I should say, I didn't mean to have all the Canadian people all like in at one point in the schedule. It accidentally happened. I'd rather have, it would have been better to, you know, space them out a bit more, but it happened that way. No one's complaining, so it's fine. Telital says, all 338 did it. Do you know what that's a reference to?
Yeah, there's 338 seats in Parliament.
Ah, right, yeah.
The hashtag I'm trying to get going for a little while. It's like, all 338. Stop with the this team, that team. It's the political class. It's the politician as a... They're just putting on costumes. They're like hockey players. You can trade it from one team to the next. They do that all the time. Oh, the guy left the libs and went to the cons, and the guy how different are they? That's impossible. They're not different. They do it all the time. You know, they're all just the same. Just put on a different jersey. Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks. Whatever, dude. It's all the same. Yeah. You're in the stands. They're millionaires. You're not. You know, they have more in common with each other than they'll ever have with you. So that's just a part that people need to let go of.
Just an irrelevant Coke versus Pepsi thing.
Yeah. Politics is, what is it? Politics is reality TV for ugly people. I heard somebody say once. True. That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Jen Stein says, Ms. Speaker for my true Zion. I don't know what that's a reference to, but Ms. Speaker for my true Zionists. I don't understand. But anyway, thank you very much. Europa Eternum. Curious as to what Jeremy thinks of Trump trolling Canada this past week and calling it America's 51st state. Yeah. Do you find it disrespectful, or does that country deserve it given its current state?
Both, probably. Probably both. I mean, he's not one of ours, all right? He's American, and he is what he is. This is what he does. I could take it. I could take it right now. I'd love to take it. I'd like to roll it right in. We'll just make it a part of America, and it'll be better than it's ever been. We'll just take – well, we're – no. You know, you're not going to just take over. It is a very disrespectful and crazy thing to say that we should just give up our – you know, just flippantly like, yeah, we'll just take it here. Like, we don't have our own national identity. Like, we don't have our own pride. We don't have our own history. We don't have our own, you know – typical American attitude, right? But it's what's more upsetting is the amount of Canadians are like, what's a great, I love Daddy Trump. I'd love to. Yeah, you like Operation Warp Speed too? You like Slava Israel? You like World War III? You like all that shit? Oh, that's 5D chess. No, it's not. You're an idiot. Go find Devin Stack Black. Go just binge his stuff for a month. Don't listen to anything else and then come back and we'll reassess. That's my medical advice to you. That's what you mean.
His millennial would probably be a good digest of all that. His appearance a few nights ago.
When I mentioned earlier, like Brian Dawson was a guy. He was another one I found early on, and I was just like, I just like binged like all of his videos because I was like, what is happening? I didn't. The USS Lusitania, World War I, the Americans. I was like, boom, what? You know, like they just lied. They just kill a bunch of their citizens and lie and false flag their way into a war they have no business in. You know, where'd the Federal Reserve come from and all these pieces that are out there that just start clicking and coming together. But yeah, he's on the money. I like him a lot and he sees it, right? And it's just people want to believe in the theater, in the story, like he's going to come save us. This guy's, he's going to fix everything. And like, does that sound like George Washington to you? Does that sound like just stay, trust the plan, you know, just stay home, watch on your couch. And, you know, we're totally being invaded and attacked, and but you just vote for me and everything will be amazing. It'll be better than it's ever been. It's not, though, and you're stacking the cabinet with mega Zionists and my fear is that, you know, they really want to play the we're doing this, the war is coming. So, you know, are you going to get Americans to fill soldiers' boots with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris as president? You will with Trump, though. You know, they'll find a way. Maybe they have to kill him. Maybe they'll whack him and say Iran did it, and everyone will go, oh, no one would believe that. Everyone will believe it. Yes, they will. Yeah, they will. And then there you go. Yeah, go blow up Iran, just like Wesley Clark said you were going to do.
I could see a bit like jumping the shark, but I think a lot of people would believe it.
It's like meat on the table, right? It's like if you're in a fight, like this guy has these weapons, you're just always keeping an eye on it. It doesn't mean he's going to use them, but they're there, and it could happen.
Yeah.
It would work, in my opinion. I
mean, they might be pushed into that. Denise Kelt says, since the Canadian Army is depleted of supplies right now, would this be the time to take over? Could you get what's left of the Canadian military drunk on New Year's Eve and just take it over?
Well, this is the thing. We're already a puppet state of the United States anyway. Like, we do whatever they want. We do everything they want. We go to every, like, whatever we have to contribute for them to take, they do it. We've already just given up control of the Arctic. It's now the North American Arctic. It used to be Canadian territory. No, it's just the North American Arctic now. So we're ceding territory. Like, it's just like, why would they need to? They already own the place. You know, they already have basically total control over this place. If they want us to change or do, like, Trump just did that. He's like, I want probably that. You know, he had Trudeau come down to this Mar-a-Lago visit and 2 days later, it's North American Arctic, and we're making changes to the borders and stuff. So, like, he just told him, like, this is what I want you to do, and he went home and did it. So they don't need to invade. But if they did need to, I would caution anybody trying to hold a geographical area this size and in these conditions in the wintertime. Like, it's Russia, you know? take over Russia. Just occupy Russia. You'd be doing the same thing here. Have fun. I wouldn't want to, especially out west, the terrain, you know, like it would be a nightmare. It would be insane. And America did try to do that once, and it, you know, the British did most of the fighting, but I don't know. I don't think it wouldn't be necessary. I mean, it's just, those wars, like, you know, it's not the 1800s anymore, right? Where we're redrawing lines on a map. Like everything's done behind closed. Like this is all just for show. There might as well not even be countries at this point. Like I said, all of them are all doing the same things anyway, at a different pace and a different time. You know, like these guys banned the guns first, or they did, but we're all on the same trajectory. We're all passing and speeding up and go. It's like we're all on a road trip together, and we're all going down the highway 401 to communism. And you know, you're at where you're at, but we're all going there anyway. So somebody else is remote controlling all the cars. So who cares if they take over Canada? It doesn't. We don't have any control over. We're not sovereign. We don't have any independence, or we don't make our own decisions anyway. So there's no need. Whatever. We're already under the control of someone. So, but yeah, the military is very tiny, and they probably would take the booze at this point. Morale's pretty low, boys.
Denise has clarified she didn't mean Americans taking over Canada. She meant Canadians taking over Canada at this point when the Canadian army is depleted of supplies. Yeah.
Well, and they're worried about like gun confiscation. And I remember during the COVID stuff, they're like, oh, well, they'll send the army and they're blah, blah. It's like, well, I'm intimately familiar with our capabilities, and that's not one of them. If we had to, like, gun to our head, like, you give me every soldier you have for combat duty right now, you're pushing 3,500 men tops. Like, that's what we have, maybe 5,000. And this is on paper, not including people that are hurt, sick, on parental leave, on the way out, you know, blind, you know, God knows what, which is a lot of them. And we have our standards are no longer existent. You don't need to pass an aptitude test anymore. You don't even need to be a citizen anymore. You can just show up. We'll just throw you in. All of the training centers are no fail options. No one's allowed to fail. So they tell the instructor, like my buddies that are still in are like senior now, right? They'd be on, I'd be at year like 20 something. I'd be like a sergeant major in RSM or something. And they're like, yeah, we're not allowed to fail anybody. Everybody passes. No, it's insanely dangerous. No one can do anything. Everyone's retarded. There's tampons in the men's rooms. We're sitting through briefings on gender diversity, and that's our military. So we have no troops. We have a few thousand men, and there's no one to replace them either. Like, so we have no one to train. That would be all hands on deck. Like, that's the combat fighting men, and then you have their support troops and so on. So we have, like, on paper, I think it's like 60,000 in the military. It's probably closer to 40,000 right now. And out of that 40,000, a tiny fraction of that are combat troops. And you couldn't hold down, if you look at a map of Canada, Prince Edward Island. The Canadian military is not capable of securing and controlling Newfoundland or PEI or Cape Breton, let alone the rest of this place. It's just it's a pipe dream. We don't have the manpower. There's no police. The police they use to break up the
car. Person power, if you don't mind.
Oh, sorry. People power. We prefer people kind. We don't like to say mankind.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah. I have a hemorrhage in my brain. I felt it. Those cops, like they used to bust up the convoy. This is all the same guys. They just bust them around from one. There was one big unit, the public order unit, the POU in BC. So I just, by nature of what I do in the show, a lot of my listeners and people are family members, or they are cops or whatever, and they would send me little tips, and you know, I'd talk, and they really wanted to find out who these sources were. They interrogated me about it at the POEC, and it's just like, I don't know, they're anonymous people, man. I don't know what you want me to tell you, but they send me, you know, pictures and stuff. They're like, this is where they're supposed to be. And they're all gone. So the entire riot unit is gone out of BC now. So I immediately went on, you know, and putting out videos. I'm like, so the riot cops are coming, and they're going to beat the shit out of everybody. Like, this is how it's going to end. They're going to go full militant. Like, that's what's going to, like how they busted up Occupy Wall Street. This is what's going to happen. And people said, oh, you're spreading division and fear. And I just eventually had to throw up my hands and go, well, you guys are going to have to learn the hard way then. You know, remember who tried to tell you. And, you know, remember who lied to you. And that's exactly what they did. But they sent this group. They went to like the Windsor Bridge first. There was a blockade there. Like, you know, it wasn't even the whole bridge. It was like a half of it, but they got them. And then they went out to Alberta and they got them. And then they finally rolled them around to Ottawa. And there was cops from other countries. There was Americans there. There was Australians there. There was all these guys. They all just wore olive drab uniforms, no name tags, no badges, no identification whatsoever, which is illegal in Canada. But I mean, they're the police. Who are you going to call? You're going to call the cops on the cops. So they did that. But that was all hands on deck. So the 40,000, 25, 30, 40, 50,000 people, whatever the numbers were in Ottawa for that, that was the full weight of the Canadian state to put that down. It was barely enough. So if there was that, you know, replicated in multiple places at once, they were really in a crisis. Like Trudeau was like hiding in a cottage for weeks. Like they didn't know what to do. There was no way. I was curious to like, I don't know what they're going to do. Like you could go full military attack, I guess, but I was just glad. Fortunately, no one was killed miraculously. I really thought there would have been. I thought at some point it's going to get crazy and somebody's going to get killed. The police are going to shoot people. Like, that'll never happen in Canada. Like if I had a dollar, well, inflation, if I had $100 for every time somebody said that'll never happen, I wouldn't have had to dip into my savings to pay off my legal fees. I wouldn't have needed donations. I wouldn't have needed anything. And that'll be next. You know, next they've now proven that they are yes men, that they will in fact do this. They will arrest children for playing hockey. They will, make sure seniors are staying in their, sequestered quarters to die alone. They'll turn on their own fellow cops, that are not vaccinated, and they'll throw their own men under the bus. That's who the police are now. So if the government, if we get into another situation where there's a big mass protest or any kind of civil disobedience, and you think the police are not going to shoot you if they're ordered to, you are wrong. They will.
All right.
They would love
to. I don't really have anything to say to that. It's quite interesting to think that it could all pop off so quickly, so easily.
Yeah.
Enlightened Despot said, "Keep up the mayhem, Jeremy. Hey, why can't we just get along? Never." All right. Thank you. And Mr. Cholley said, "Reminder to hit the fire button and don't be stingy. Donate for Wozzy's hard efforts." Thank you very much, Mr. Cholley. I appreciate it.
Great job, with this, by the way. This is a lot of work, Like I don't envy it, I've done the one day, 12, 14-hour stream marathon with like a bunch of different people, and that was a lot. And then we did a fundraiser kind of thing where we every day for a few weeks, we'd go on for a couple hours, and all the money we took in was for the guy's legal defenses and stuff. That, how long does this go on for? Right till New Year's or Christmas or?
No. Well, kind of. It goes on till Christmas Day like this.
Okay.
And then I'm going to have a set of hangouts, for group hangouts. So it's going to be quite different, and it might be more tiring. It might be less. I don't know yet. It's been a long time since I did one like that. So we'll just have to wait and see. Okay. And then the next one was curious as to what. Oh no, I've done that one. Okay. Right. Let me see where we were. Okay. Telital says, "Share the Hategate affair, please, Jeremy." God. Hategate.
Wow. Where do I even begin with that? There's a lot there to go through. It was a couple of years ago now. I'd have to even roll back in time. So essentially what happened, so there's a kind of an indie journalist lawyer, she covers a lot of just the protest main, the perpetual nonsense of people protesting and stuff in Canada. So she's always there filming a lot of it and doesn't really just documenting it. Right. Kareem Assad is her name. And, she actually flew out to my bail hearing in Saskatchewan where I was actually abducted. They sent cops in their own plane to come on a national warrant for a common assault charge, which was entirely made up, and then flew me out there on a plane like I'm Pablo Escobar, denied me bail. I have no criminal record. I'd never been, and they're like, "Nope, you're too dangerous to be left outside." Which was insane. A woman murdered another woman in a nightclub in the same city the same day that I was, and she was released on bail, I think by the same judge, but I wasn't. So she was like, "Huh," and she's a lawyer herself. So she's like, "This is unusual. This is very strange." And then, she got a hold of me in jail over the phones. And then, eventually, started digging into the story. And, what happened was there's a group in Canada called the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, which is like, you guys have Hope Not Hate in the UK. They have the SPLC and stuff. It's just the same. It's a bunch of Jews being dickheads and making up lies about people and smearing stuff. So it was kind of like this self-licking ice cream cone where they would print, smear stories and, stuff like this. And these would get repeated and cycled by the media, which would then be used as evidence by the police to justify whatever, investigations they were doing. And this whole time, I'm like, this is all this is. Like, this is just made up. No, that's not true. That's not true. So while this is going on, after the convoy, one of the guys, that was actually Mr. Rimjob, was part of the team that recovered the FOIPOP information, where we were like, we want all the emails and information on Mr. McKenzie and Diaglon from this time to that time. And we got those, and it proved exactly what we thought. The police were being politically motivated. They had no idea what they were talking about. There was no evidence of a militia whatsoever. You had a top inspector at the RCMP, which is very high in the police, say, there is no anything to suggest this is accurate. You know, you guys have completely, you're losing the plot here. Like, stick to the facts. This isn't good police work. And the media is asking them, you know, the police to confirm what the public safety minister said. So this police officer goes online and copy pastes an anti-hate article and gives that as the police response to say, yeah, that's what's going on. Like, just mind blowing levels of incompetence and ineptitude. So the police are being just led around by the nose by political activists in the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, which are funded by the government, by the way. And that's how all this works. So that was, I don't know if it's still up. It was hategate.ca, but I think if you Google it, you'll find it. She has it all in long form, kind of essay story with screenshots and in the emails from the police and everything. It's all in there. But I was saying this for years, like they're just targeting us because they can. It's state funded. It's being run this way. The police are involved. Oh, you guys are a bunch of crazy conspiracy theorists. Like, well, I was right again, actually. So, yeah, very insane. And it obviously was not picked up by any mainstream media. It was just totally buried. It's a pretty sensational and crazy story. You know, you've got your police are just not doing police work. They don't investigate anything. They were using anonymous Twitter accounts as like evidence, like who are these people? You know, like, I don't know. I just found this on the internet. It's probably true. So I put it in. This is what their intelligence was, just justify arresting me and, you know, coming after everybody and doing everything that they did. And then that was all, not a single one of these cases or charges even made it to trial. They're all dismantled and annihilated before you even got there. You know, and Canada has an average conviction rate of 60%, and I was charged 23 times. So how many convictions should I have? I have zero. So, but how many should I have?
So what do you think was the point of that then? Oh.
I think it just got out of control. I think the point was, initially they would try to have me. Well, what they did was the same people. First, they smear you and they attack you in hopes that you'll shut up. You know, they'll publicly humiliate you and try to embarrass you and, you know, try to put some pressure on you like that. And when it first happens, it's kind of, you know, jarring to read about yourself in the media being spoken about like that. Like, that's me. That's my face and picture on the internet. Like, this is crazy. Like, I was just some guy with a YouTube channel and they're treating me like I'm a hostile, like I'm Hamas or something. Like, this is a real problem we got to look at, you know? And if that doesn't work, well, then they escalate and they put more, but then they'll go after, you know, put pressure on your friends and family, your employers and these kinds of things. If that doesn't work, well, then we're going to escalate to law enforcement harassment, you know, and they just went all the way with it. They threw the kitchen sink at, I was looking at 10 years in prison, you know, for the various, you know, sum of charges. And if I wasn't, you know, attached to the right legal team, which, you know, Karima helped with, they were excellent. Amazing, you know, just knifed, you know, like Jack the Ripper, just destroyed it. It was like, all I need is a guy who's got a brain and is honest and can see this, and it'll be annihilated. It'll be ripped apart. And the whole time, as soon as I was got given bail and went home, he was like, you should probably just shut up. It's like, I'm not going to do that. Much to his, he did not like this, but I went right back to work. I sat right back down and I said, if I was guilty, wouldn't I be fleeing the country? Would I be sitting here saying any of these things? Like, I'm going to beat every single one of these. And here's what's actually going. Everything I said was true. Every last word and everything they said was a lie. Every last word. And here I am totally unmolested and living my life and free and doing quite well, actually. Where are they? Why? I think they're doing a symposium on rising hate on the internet or some nonsense to, you know, talking to themselves to justify passing new legislation. So the whole thing was really insane.
Somebody posted a link to a summary of it. So there, I've posted it in the the live chats, and there it is on screen for anyone who's curious. Well, that just sounds mental. But thank God the charges were defeated and dismissed. Otherwise, you'd have been completely
it was done in such a way, like, I was very lucky because they didn't take me seriously at all. And why would you? Like, I'm just an army guy in a basement podcast, essentially. Like, you know, we'll slam a bunch of charges on this guy. Like, they raided my house and took all my firearms and all of it was legal. But they're like, we'll just say it's not. We'll just give you 10 firearms charges. And say, because it's going to take you 2-3 years to work through the court system. You're going to pay all this money. You're going to, the cops don't care, right? And they were just told to, which was proven, like, yeah, I was just told to do this to you. Cool. By who? From where? Like, what desk, what level of the government? Like, who was the guy that said, get him? That's what I want to find out. I think I have my suspicions, but that's what they did. They just come after you, and the punishment is the process, and so on, they say. And exactly. Yeah, it was just one after, it wasn't even on the same day. They got me, that got the raid before the convoy. They did that, and then it was just one after the other. Anything they could. Well, that guy said you were harassing him, so charged in another province, which is also, I actually went after the prosecutor in tried to argue it was like abuse of process or something, which it was, and it was heard by a superior court judge and should have been, you know, except, but they don't punish their own. It's very, very hard, but you know, took a shot at it anyway. She was sweating, you know, I almost got her license, you know, almost was a black, and she already had been in trouble for doing shit like this before. So they find these, you know, prosecutors with no scruples at all to just, you know, they don't mind, but you know, who am I? And it was like, you know, from their point of view, which I would have agreed with, like, what's this, what's he going to do? Is he going to get like $250,000 and get some like big time lawyer from Toronto to come out here and like, ah, you know, we got him. It's fine. Well, that's what I did. And they didn't have anything set up. It was just kind of just throw all the charges on him. He'll probably have to cop to some of them or plead out and he'll be in jail for a while. And they didn't, I don't think they thought that I would fight it as hard as we did. And I was lucky that's how it went down, because if they were coming after me now, I mean, I can, you know, like my lawyers would just be like, Your Honor, how many times is this going to have to, this is the case. It becomes very difficult now because they can argue this is just political, you know, pressure and attack. This is not based on, like, look at the history of this. Well, now I'm 23-0.
So, yeah, I can see that if they don't get you the first time or the second or whatever, then at that point, they'll never get you because it's clearly political, and you can always.
I mean, if I did something like, you know, I got drunk and ran somebody over, like I'm screwed, obviously. Like, but if I do anything illegal, they'll get you. Like, you have to be totally above board on everything. Like everything, you can't even miss your taxes, or they'll get you. So it's like, okay, that's how it's going to be. So that's how it is. But back then it was just kind of wild. Like they didn't really take me seriously. They didn't set up this elaborate, like, we are going to get him, make sure there's nothing, there's no loose ends, there's no way he can escape, there's not going to, they didn't do any of that. It was very sloppy and lazy. And, you know, that's it's eventually why I was able to escape. But, whew.
Well, thank God
you go there for a little while.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Jenstein says, Alex Woods, shout out for coming out. Celebrate. Thank you very much. Brian7316, good to see Jeremy here. Cheers, Scotland, from Diagolon. Thank you very much. Talital, oh yeah, he's already done that one. Okay, 1Mia1, the fighting spirit isn't dead in Canada because of Rage and some others. Appreciate you all. Very good. Yeah, it's clear that there is a fighting spirit still there. Needs to be. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that
the desire is there for sure.
Yeah. Andy asks, "What are your thoughts on Maxime Bernier and the People's Party?" I think you already talked about them.
Yeah. What did I say about politicians? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much. Not a fan.
All right.
They're just purple conservatives. They're the purple conservatives. They're busy. I think they're doing events in Brampton right now with a bunch of Indian candidates in an Indian diaspora, Indian city of Brampton, because they're so different. They get it, you know. He's busy filling his roster of... Because they're running people in as many ridings as they can. They just take whoever.
Yeah. Okay. Is it like going after the base brown vote kind of thing? No.
I think so. I caught half.
Doesn't matter. Don't worry. It's okay. All right. And then... Okay. Dr. Jenstein says, everyone will be boring after Jeremy. Thanks for hosting him, sir. Well, I hope you're incorrect, but yeah, thank you. And Jeremy is certainly a high-energy interviewee. The White Stag. Jeremy, you should introduce Woz to Phil. He's gone. Shit. I think he'll be back. It seems like Starlink has seen us through quite a lot so far. So, hello.
Heaven help me.
No, don't worry. It's okay. I was just saying, I think Starlink has done you quite well.
So good for so long.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're nearly through. The White Stag says, Jeremy, you should introduce Woz to Phil. Oh no, you've frozen again. Oh bloody hell. Somebody really doesn't want him to introduce me to Phil. Okay. Right. Okay. No, dropped out again. Bloody hell. Somebody, like, he needs a better internet connection. This is, right, okay. Hello.
I switched again. We're back on Starlink. I guess that's the end of the landline. It's a buried landline. And they're like, yeah, it's just the wind or something. Like, the wind. Yeah, okay. Sure it's not. The guy driving away seemed to be Indian. Did he have anything to... No. Oh, well.
All right. Somebody is asking you to introduce me to Phil. Now, who is Phil?
Oh, this is actually our Supreme Leader.
Ah, right.
There's police reports about him.
Oh, dear.
Because they think it's a militia. They think he's a militia commander. He's a demonic goat figurine who time travels and has a narcotics problem. He's my sidekick. We're very. Yeah.
Is he the emperor?
I got to tell you. Yeah, well, they asked me about this on the inquiry, because again, I was in jail, and they subpoenaed me to testify at the public order, basically the inquiry into the convoy and stuff. And you know, they were like, "So, do you have a leader?" And I was like, "Well, there is this. You know, can you describe for the commission what that is?" Because they're trying to paint me like this guy's basically I'm basically Osama bin Laden. I'm Plaid bin Laden, more or less. And they're like, so. At what point were they going to mention this? It's like, well, that's just a silly thing that, you know, it's, yeah, I get it on some pretty impassioned, you know, rant. I have opinions. I'm a passionate guy. I'm out of war for this country. A lot of my friends died for it. So I'm allowed to be upset. I'm allowed to say things that I'm upset about and vent and talk. We're allowed to talk, right? When I was a kid, they said, use your words, you know, just express yourself. You don't resort to use your words, right? Don't fight. Don't use fists or anything. So that's what I did. And they thought that was terrorism. And people still to this day, they think it's when they see the flag, the dagger, it's just a black flag with a white stripe going through it, which is my finger. I was on the toilet one day. I was like, I guess we need a flag. And I opened a flag maker and with my finger and I went, there, done. Like as a joke, the whole thing was just meant to be like, stupid. It's essentially just, you know, the fan club of the community. And, you know, it just totally took off. And like, yeah, and there's people still, they see that flag out and they call the cops and the police have to put out a statement, say there's extreme in the era and we're gonna have to put up surveillance cameras to find it. Insane, you know, it's taken on a life of its own. It's just very stupid. And kind of my whole goal, I guess I've already achieved it. When I set out, I was like, I had deep suspicions. Like I was in the military and there were people in there that shouldn't have been there, like in command positions. And I was starting to get less and less naive to like, are the people in charge retarded? You know, like they can't all be, you know, the government's stupid, but they know what's going on. And I had this, I was like, I think they're the dumbest people that have ever lived. I think they might be so out of touch with reality that they're so fucking stupid that, you know, I don't think people would believe it if they knew. And there's people that are like, oh, well, the Daglon is the feds, it's a psyop. But I actually know because it's my life. You know, I know for absolute certain they are the dumbest people that have ever lived. They read off of script. I watch them. I watch senators. I watch members of parliament. I watch the public safety minister. I watch police go, yep, this is the terrorists and we gotta watch. All this stuff, they're just reading something probably written by the Canadian Anti-Hate Network. So it's like, do they just read what's put in front of them and just say the line and go home? Yes, that is how this place works. No one knows what's going on. They're all retarded. They're all multimillionaires. They're being well overpaid pigs to sit there and dictate to you things they know nothing with total authority. Like one of them was like, oh, I've seen this kind of thing before. This isn't my first rodeo. You know, we got to put a stop to this. Like, oh, you have. Are you sure, miss? Would you like to get into that? No justice, no accountability. Is anybody going to pay for that? Like I said, where are the terrorists? Where's the arrest? This was the justification for the Emergency Act. The suspension of civil liberties in Canada, mass arrests, you know, financial tyranny, all of that was based on this. That's the truth. And that can never be undone. Like the humiliation is complete. The government of Canada declared war on my imagination and they lost. So you know, like my goal was like, they're very silly and stupid people. Like in a Monty Python way, like that's basically our government. And I was like, I was just trying to make the media look bad. And to be fair, we took like photos and you know, we're at like a family barbecue. One of these things, like there was like 60 people there, 50 people, something like that. There was a handful of guys there that brought like shotguns and guns. Like there's a big like, wide open rural area. They're like, you know, shooting on the property and stuff. And they're like, I was like, again, I bought those, you know, the scary, cause I noticed they're very afraid of these skull masks. You know, these groups like, well, those are, that means that Hitler's going to get you or whatever. So I bought some and I was like, let's get the flag and we'll put these on and take a picture. And I put it on my Instagram page. And it was like, we're going to get you. Like, just stupid. It was clearly silly. And I was like, they're going to be dumb enough. They're going to put this on the news. And then I'm going to laugh my ass off. And then they're going to look so dumb. Right. Because the police are going to come by and look at this and go, what are you doing? And I thought, you know, it's like I threw a rock at a window. It's like, I'm going to break a window. That's what I thought I was going to do. And it went through the window into the basement where there was grenades or something, and the whole building exploded. So I was just trying to make the media look dumb, but it went all the way up to the prime minister's desk. Who's still talking about us? So last week he made some mention of us. For what reason, I don't know, but I didn't even listen to it. I don't care. But I was, you know, it was when they first started talking about us in the House of Commons, I heard the guys laughing up in the other room and, you know, just gasping, going, oh my God. They came out and was like, what is it? And they're like, look. And they're like, it's an organized militia. We're in total danger. We have to shut the country down. I'm literally in sweatpants sitting on a milk. We're in an abandoned house, like an Airbnb that hasn't been occupied. There's no furniture in it. And the guy, so they're like, yeah, you guys can just crash there. We're living on air mattresses on the floor, no furniture, sitting around eating like Doritos and shit. Sitting there like the whole country's talking about this. Like, oh, who are these people? We're sitting here like we're drinking. We're like, this is the dumbest thing that's ever happened. Like, this is the dumbest thing. This Heritage Minutes, like, there needs to be a movie. This is insane. But yeah, that's the quick and dirty. And then afterwards, of course, after the convoy, they had to, you know, we got to get them. So they started, you know, they arrested me before, and then the other four were after.
Fucking hell. All right. Thank you for telling that story. GB Mac says, we all need to take the red ensign to our old folk. Get the stories. That's a good point.
What was that? I missed it. I disconnected for a second.
We all need to take the red ensign to our old folk and get the stories.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Dr. Jen Stein says, keep it going. Thank you very much. Telital, thank you, Rage. The world needs to know about this. Hail Diagolon. And then Ms. Speaker says, see my Telegram channel for all your original Hategate media. So there we go, Ms. Speaker. There that you was
go. I forgot one other detail. The humiliation isn't complete yet. There's one more humiliation further for Canadian state. So they took this story, and then they put it into an international briefing of the Five Eyes Intelligence Network. So the United States, Australia, United Kingdom, in New Zealand, was told to be on the lookout for a goat figurine because it may attack them. That happened. So, good job. Good job, boys, if you're still watching. Hey, you still employed? Good. I hope so. I hope you never retire. Why would I want to fight somebody competent, you know? It's like, yeah, pray that your enemies are ridiculous. You know?
I wonder how much money they've spent on this. It's probably millions.
Yeah, it's tens of millions, yeah. So I had almost, I was counting, it got up to like high 80s, but somewhere between 80 and 100 people that I'm aware of that were approached by Public Safety, CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, about me, about what we're doing, about where's the compound? Like, what are you talking about? Who's Philip? Like, we're infiltrating Al-Qaeda. And it was like, we're just dudes hanging out. They tracked down an ex-girlfriend I had from like 12 years ago. Talk to him. She's like, I don't know, 2016? What are you? Said she reached out to me on Facebook and she's like, these guys are here asking for you. Like, yeah. And they're all over the country. And they're like, and they have to, the guys were like, well, that's where the office is. They wanted to travel here, get a hotel. There's two of them. They make this much money. So this trip was 100 grand at least, times, you know, and that's just the physical people going out and doing like human intelligence, like human and surveillance. And there was a whole task force. I think it was called Operation Hendon. Derek would ask about that. But and the Hategate stuff, like there was dozens of officers put on this. Like, I don't know. I would say 10 million on a minimum. And I think I'm being conservative. Maybe 50. I have no idea. I don't want to know. I think they did FOIPOP those and they won't release. They won't give it to us. It's supposed to be 30 days and they'll give you the info. And then they needed a 30-month extension. And it's been over a year now. So I don't know if we're going to get these. Freedom of information requests about how much money they did spend and if it's still ongoing and how much for. I think the documents only went to like the summer, like July of 2022, and we wanted like all the way to end of 2023. We don't get to see the internal discussions about the conclusion of this brilliant operation. Well, I'd love to if they ever do. CRJ, you know, get on. It's almost Christmas. Come on.
Fuck's sake. All right. So then Brian7316 says, we Dags love Jeremy and Philip. There we go. I'm not surprised. That's a hell of a story. All right. Well, look.
If it didn't happen to me, I wouldn't believe it. You know, it's.
Yeah. I get the feeling that this conversation could go on for a long time, but I'm getting very tired. So I'm gonna have to end it. But it's been a real blast. Yes. I think Starlink has been the more reliable one.
Maybe. It seemed, yeah, I don't know. It is generally, yeah. So I was kinda surprised it was being choppy. Like it'll drop for 45 minutes sometimes. So I usually do 2-3 hours. It's not, or 3.5. It's usually not too bad, but yeah, it's great. Short of building my own 100-foot tower to just clear all of the trees and then get multiple dishes pointed in every direction, so there's interlocking arcs of service. Like, I don't know. I don't know how else to make this any better. I mean, I'm in a major city. Like, there's an international airport. Like, we don't have the internet here. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Carrier pigeons possible. I may just pre-record these and start uploading them. I'll put them on USB drives and send them in Canada Post, but they're on strike. I don't know if they're back yet. So it's hard
living out here. It sounds like smoke signals might be the best, actually. Or carrier pigeons.
Yeah. That other meme where it's like, how are Canadians doing right now? It's that kid in the chair and it's just like every vein in his head. You know, you ever see that one?
Yeah,
some kid in high school, he's just like barely containing, is going to blow up. I think that's how most Canadians feel right now, all the time. Just containing.
Oh, Lampshade Denier says, Jeremy, if Canada becomes the 51st state, your internet will improve.
That's true. I could get Comcast. I'd be paying a third of what I'm paying now. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'll still think about this. I knew he'd come around. I could see it on his face. Bribed him with an internet and a big money.
All right. Well, let's end it
there. Let's make Philip the governor. If you make Philip the governor, then maybe. Yeah.
There's quite a dilemma. All right. Let's end this one here. Jeremy McKenzie, this has been a real, real roller coaster with all the technical stuff and all your stories and one-liners. It's been quite a ride.
it's never boring, at least, I guess. I can't complain about that, you know.
It definitely wasn't boring.
I say this on my show sometimes.
Definitely.
You know, because it's a lot of... It's hard on a lot of people. It is rough here. A lot of people are not doing well, and, you know, and it's stressful, and they don't know what's going to happen and this and that. And I go, well, I mean, we're all going to die, right? Eventually, you get one life, you come and you go. And it's like, think of, look, it could be the 1600s and you could be an onion farmer. And the most exciting thing that's ever happened is like, do you remember that stray dog that came to town once? Like, that could have been your life. You know, this is, you could have had any number of things happen. And this is what we got. So I think we could have done a lot worse. And we get a front row seat to the end of the world, basically. So, you know, ride it till the wheels fall off, I think. Better, you know, you want to be bored? Just digging, farming hay all day? That would suck, you know?
That's true. More fun. That's an optimistic way to look at it. GB Max said, I'm going to miss ham legs. That cavernous mayo spewing makes aliens jealous. Oh, those drippings. All right. I think that might be internal jargon. But thank you. And then...
We don't want to get Genstein,
in. Sorry?
No, you don't want to get in that, trust me.
No,
oh, God, I'm going to throw up.
I had that feeling. And Dr. Genstein said, thanks, guys. Take care. Fuck CRG.
They fight back and forth. They like to do this. They send competing. I reap the benefits, so I don't mind it at all. I encourage it.
Okay. All right, then. Okay, we'll end it there, then. Thank you for all the super chats from various platforms. It's been very kind. And thank you, Jeremy, for appearing on Millennial X.
Thanks for having me.
I should say that tomorrow is going to be a weird one, because it's going to be in two halves. The first half will begin an hour early at 7 p.m. GMT with Godfrey Bloom. Then 2 hours later, Dan Tubb. Then there will be an hour break. And at midnight, Walt Bismarck. then 2 hours later, Harrison H. Smith, and then the Winter Solstice AMA. So that's going to be a strange night, but I'm sure it'll be quite fun. All right. In the meantime, Jeremy, thank you for appearing. Everyone else, I will see you later. Bye-bye for now.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
On this anniversary year, a true bounty can be found in the merchandise store. T-shirts, mugs, and an incredible range of posters. All exclusive products. Every one the perfect way to remember this unique time. At the end of the festival, a very special poster will be available. But no need to wait for that. See what you can pick up today.